United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credibility.
Kim Baker resigned as head of the PTL club.
Let's go! 1-800-530-2229 or 1-800-530-WSOM. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Well, good morning. This is Sticks in the Air Chair for Tracy. Tracy's off today, so it's Eric and I are here in studio. And coming up, we've got Ben will probably be calling in here in a bit. And Tracy, if she gets through her appointment, will be calling in. So we're here to entertain you. So what's going on today, Eric?
Oh, nothing. I'm just glad to be here. I'm feeling great. Looking forward to tackling some of the issues today. I've got a lot on my mind today.
We've got a whole lot going on in the world. We've got the Bundys. The militia's still out there in Nevada at the Bundy Ranch. And so we've got that going on. We have now a growing number of Western states are suing the federal government to reclaim land for their own use from the federal government. I just heard on the way in here they're going to make powdered alcohol legal.
Powdered alcohol?
Powdered alcohol.
That one got by me.
It's called Palcohol, P-A-L-C-O-H-O-L.
Wow.
And you can mix it in water. You can snort it, it says.
Wow.
And it's just...
And I take it has the same effect.
Yeah, yeah, and not only that, it's I mean, they're advertising as an instant drunk.
Mm.
And the alcohol ATF has just approved it. It'll be on the shelves next fall, I think.
Well, Lord knows I'm a bit more intrigued by the various states across the West engaging in a usurpation of what many feel are God-given rights,
mm-hmm.
you know, expressed in the Constitution, but foreordained nonetheless.
Well, and the thing, Eric, is we've been going down this road for some time now. The problem is we've allowed both the 10th Amendment and the 4th Amendments to be destroyed. And I don't know how to dial it back. I mean, the RICO laws and the war on drugs has just destroyed the Fourth Amendment. Who's making a noise? That's right.
There we go. That's not an excuse I'm inclined to accept, and I'm going to tell you why. Covert governmental operations have allowed that kind of stuff to, have allowed drugs and whatnot to proliferate in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your average drug dealer in the ghetto is not culpable in the initial sense for that proliferation. Because why? Homeboy here had no access to get it in the country. He doesn't have the connections to have it flown and floated in here.
Right.
So that's going to lead to some higher powers, people who, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree with that. But the thing that bothers me with what these drug laws have done is they've made the Fourth Amendment virtually null and void.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's the problem.
And, you know, I mean, there have been countless stories going back clear into the 80s of honest businessmen having their property seized under the suspicion, not tried in a court of law, not brought before a judge, but under suspicion. There was a fellow, a black gentleman.
Okay.
He was a landscaper, and every year he did the same thing. I think he was in Memphis, and he flew to Texas. Every spring he would fly to Texas, I believe it was. He bought a one-way ticket, paid for it with cash. When he got to Texas, he bought his nursery stock, rented a truck, and drove back to Memphis. And somebody at the airline thought it was odd that this black gentleman was buying a plane ticket with cash, a one-way ticket. So they called the ATF, or the FBI or whoever, and they arrested this guy and seized his money. He had $10,000 cash in his pocket. And it took him years. Because they're throwing the burden of proof on you now. And it just can't be that way.
And, I mean, I agree with that. And what makes it unacceptable is that those that are on the front lines, quote-unquote, enforcing this constitutionally wayward precedent, use the war on drugs as an excuse, use the proliferation of vice as an excuse. And it just really gets under my skin. It really does.
Yeah, we've come a long way. We really have. I mean, it's unbelievable how far we've come.
It's a far fall. Very far fall.
720, what's going on?
Yes. Hey, Lucy. Hey, how are you? How are you
doing? Well. Good.
That's good. What do you mean, powdered alcohol? I'm so confused.
I heard this on another program on the way in, and I said I thought this has got to be a joke, but it's right on DailyBeast.com. Snortable alcohol on its way.
What use would you have for it?
Well, I wouldn't have any. That's for sure.
I guess it's a legal way to get high. Legal way to get high. The name of the company is Palcohol.
What use would you have for a powdered alcohol?
They're saying for like if you want to sneak into a athletic event where you can't bring your own booze, then you can mix it with water. Once you're in there.
So they're hoping you break the rules.
Yeah.
Why would you snort? I mean, seriously, come on now. Is that a great way
to
snort cocaine?
Why do people inject heroin? You know?
They want
to alter their consciousness.
Legal?
Oh, it's legal.
Oh, thanks. That's crazy.
Yeah. Alcohol, the ATF has just approved it.
That is so weird. Jeez, oh, man. Welcome to America.
Well, you know, I mean...
This isn't American. There's nothing natively American about this. We have gone so far away from our American values. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Now, granted, the Puritans called wine the good creature of God, but I don't think they had this kind of thing in mind when they said that.
Yeah, but you know, this has always been a drinking nation, though. It really has. If you go back and look at history, I forget what. I think the average American at the time of the Revolution was consuming about 3 gallons of spirits a year.
Okay.
But you got to remember, that was the only analgesic they had.
Well, I don't know if it's so much, you know, the analgesic aspect. I'm sure that's a variable in the calculus. But it's just something that can alter your state. Do humans have an innate capacity or tendency to want to do that every now and again? I mean, because at the end of the day, coffee could have the same effect. And
oh.
This is partly why in the Anglosphere by the middle of the 18th century, 1 pound of coffee was literally worth 4 acres of land.
Yeah.
And that's composer Wolfgang Beethoven would meticulously select 20 beans for a single cup of coffee. It's
we do like our mind-altering substances in the West. We do. Look at tobacco. I mean, tobacco was used as currency in some society for a while. So, you know, I mean, this isn't anything new, but it just seems like it's more out of control. It just seems like people are less functional than they used to be.
We have no common sense.
Right.
Hey, Trace, we need to quit calling it common sense because it's not all that common. Yeah, that's true.
We have no self-control. We've lost it all. We don't like to think, and we like being zombies. We're just here.
We're existing. We're not living. and a lot of us are just existing. We're not living. You know, I mean, look at the hours that people spend wrapped up in video games. I mean, we all have our diversions that if you're not careful, they'll take over your life.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, I come and hang out with Tracy 2 days a week, so, you know.
what are you trying to say, Stick?
No.
Oh,
it's
no,
a good opiate
no.
for the ideology.
What am I trying to say? Yeah, it keeps me sane, actually. It's hard. It's good to be around like-minded people. So,
and you and Jeff think alike? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, we do.
That's hilarious.
So, you're up in Cleveland today, right?
Yes.
Okay. Don't get caught in a traffic jam.
I'm already lost. Don't worry about it. I stay lost.
You don't have a GPS on your phone?
Yes, I have a GPS. Do you know how big Cleveland Clinic is?
Oh, yeah. I've been there. I was
okay.
up for my headaches.
So when it says Cleveland Clinic on the GPS, it gets you to Cleveland Clinic, which is a whole other city in itself.
Yeah.
Sure enough.
University hospitals is like that, too. It's
So I'm at Cleveland Clinic, and I'm lost.
Okay.
Got to give
Are you out of the car yet?
No.
Okay.
Speaking of Cleveland Clinic, I got to give a shout-out to one of the best headache doctors in the industry. When I was diagnosed with trigeminal autonomic headaches, I got to give a shout-out to Cleveland Clinic's Dr. Steven Samples.
He just broke the rule, Tracy. He used a three-syllable word on the air.
Sorry.
Don't worry, before the day's over, he'll probably get the four.
you know, Eric,
I'm almost sure he'll get the four.
Yeah, probably. I mean, you have become a celebrity in your own right. I talk to people, and they love to listen to you speak.
Well, I don't take credit for it. I just chalk it up to the same source that provided our nation's greatness and our potential return to greatness. I just chalk it up to what Washington called the favorable interposition of God's providence. So that's it.
Okay.
I'm with you on that, Eric, but I got God's providence, but I don't have four silver words.
So anyways, now I've been following this thing out there in Nevada. Have you been watching that at all, Tracy?
No, I have not.
Well, I guess the militia's still out there.
Jeb Bush. Go ahead.
Following
Jeb.
The militia's still can't. What's up with Jeb Bush other than he wants to
go back to the militia. I'll tell you about Jeb in a minute.
Okay. Well, I guess they're standing guard out there over the Bundy family for fear that the feds are going to come back. But and I have to give Mr. Bundy credit because he is calling for nonviolence. He never wanted they're Mormons, and he never wanted any violence to start with. In fact, he publicly asked people to leave their guns at home. So he wanted this to be a civil rights type. Civil disobedience is what he was after.
I don't see that working. Not in his case. You want to know why?
Why?
He's sober and monotheistic. That's why it's not going to work.
There we go with a three-syllable word again.
Sorry.
I suppose if he was Muslim, there probably wouldn't be a problem, huh?
Or if he was some sort of a moral deviant, there definitely wouldn't be a problem.
Oh, so if he had a homosexual commune, he'd probably be all right.
Oh yeah, he'd be
okay.
Yeah, he'd be more content than a boll weevil in a cotton field.
But I haven't figured this out yet because supposedly this boils down to a turtle, and they've got another preserve where there's so many of these turtles that they're euthanizing them. So I think this is more about control than anything else.
Six. Why don't you euthanize a turtle?
Because there's too many of them. They're overpopulated. But they're endangered but overpopulated. I haven't figured that one out yet.
Concerned about your
Whoa,
health?
Break
Confused
time.
About the amount
we'll be back
of
in
prescription
a minute.
Drugs you are taking? Wondering which vitamins to take? Call Dr. Matt Mason, board-certified wellness physician as well as a chiropractor at Mason Wellness Center. Dr. Mason combines nutritional therapy, functional medicine, and chiropractic services to keep people healthy and get those of you that are ill feeling better faster. Mason Wellness Center is located on Layer Road in Warren, Ohio. To make an appointment or to receive additional info, call our office at 330-219-6450.
Fit Family. Unique, individualized, and promoting a healthy, active lifestyle. Fit Family on Route 46 in Austin Town designs a personal exercise program just for you with your own personal trainer. Each client at Fit Family in Austin Town receives their own certified personal trainer with their membership. And at Fit Family, we listen to you and design a fitness program to the type of fitness you're looking for with all the equipment you need for strength training, cardio, Pilates, and more. We also offer classes in Zumba, yoga, kickboxing, step, 5K training, line dancing, silver sneaker, and real rider cycling. Fit Family is open Monday through Saturday with hours that fit your schedule. Find out more about Fit Family in Austintown. Call 330-793-4466. That's 330-793-4466. Visit us on the web at fitfamily1.com. That's fitfamily1.com.
Your car will look brand new after a professional cleaning at Kingley Hand Wash and Wax. All work is done by hand, which protects the paint, leaves no water spots. You won't believe how good it looks. Walk-ins are always welcome, or book an appointment for a full detailing. Thursday is Ladies' Day. Get an additional service free with any regular wash. Kingley offers pickup and drop-off service. They'll take you to work, an appointment, and pick you up when your car is ready. If it's not Kingley, it's not clean. Kingley Hand Wash and Wax.
Let's talk for a moment about a great doctor. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley. If you're looking for a doctor to help you with your prenatal needs or help with your decisions or questions about birth control, call 330-746-7007 and talk to Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley. And read the testimonials at aiwhealth.com.
I could not have had a better experience. Dr. Hill was always attentive to my needs and empathetic when the situation called for that type of sentiment. Dr. Hill's office environment and staff are pleasant and warm. Clearly, a good deal of care has gone into making the visiting experience a good one.
All patients receiving prenatal care get a free designer diaper bag. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley only has one goal, ensuring your health so you could fully enjoy all of the times of your life. 1350 Fifth Avenue in Youngstown. Call 330-746-7007 and visit aiwhealth.com.
Everyone faces challenges in their lives. Handling it on our own sometimes is too overwhelming, but Turning Point Counseling can help. Turning Point offers the highest quality, individualized, confidential behavioral health care. Our professional and caring staff can help you or your loved one get started on the road to recovery today. Turning Point Counseling, because behavioral health care is health care. Don't wait. Visit our website for more information or call today for care. Everybody faces challenges in their lives. Sometimes these challenges can be too much to handle on our own. That's where Turning Point Counseling can help for depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, drug and alcohol abuse and addiction, personality disorders, crisis intervention, and more. Turning Point also provides residential services in our crisis stabilization unit for those who need inpatient care. Turning Point Counseling Services, helping you on the road to recovery.
We're back with Tracy and friends on News Talk 600 WSOM, 347-945-5229, or toll-free at 1-800-530-WSOM, online at tracyandfriends.com or 600WSOM.com.
And we're back, and my music isn't working. We're going to have to figure that one out. This is Tracy and friends, Sticks here in the air chair, and Eric's with me here, and Tracy's on the phone, and we've got Kavina Man on the phone, as well as 212. How you doing, Kavina Man?
I'm pretty good. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. How you doing?
Yes, sir.
I'm doing good. I was listening to what you were saying about the ranch situation, and it seems like things have calmed down at least on the surface. I just for me, I'm hoping it stays peaceful and just gets resolved in the court. Perhaps it might have to come down to you know, them having to detain Bundy until he pays his grazing fees and remove the cows. I'm hoping that, you know, that can be done without militia people.
Yeah, I hope it's settled peacefully, too. It's my understanding the mistake the federal government made was they sought judgment in court, and they received a judgment, but instead of placing a lien on the property, they seized the property. And that's where the federal government was operating illegally.
Well, I don't understand why the federal government won't just sell the guy the land. Sell it to him for a dollar.
See, you're not being able to understand it or relate to it brings to bear, Kavina Man, an excellent point. What we have to do to combat government intrusion is this. We have to put the laws, we have to put the federal law itself on trial. You know, is the federal government, are taxes and laws and statutes as intrusive as these in keeping with the spirit of the founding fathers, in keeping with the freedom, in keeping with liberty? That's what we have to do. We have to put that law on trial. That's a good, I mean, you touched off on you brought to bear a very important point, a very jugular point, to my view. I mean, when I was in the John Birch Society, this kind of thing went on all the time. This kind of discussion went on all the time.
Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, that wasn't me that interjected. That was somebody else on the phone there.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I don't understand why the federal government, in an act of good faith, should sell land to the guy.
That would be very ignorant if the government did that. That would just be who's that retarded in the government?
Well, I mean, we've got a huge federal deficit, and it's my understanding that when these states were accepted into the union, that the federal government was supposed to use those lands for the benefit of the state rather than the benefit of itself. And many of the western states are suing to reclaim federal land for their own uses because the federal government has placed so much of this land off limits for use. And Idaho has a very good argument now. They have state-managed forest lands, and they have federally managed forest lands. And they are going to court, and they're showing that the state-managed lands are having less forest fires, less catastrophic forest fires, than the federally managed lands. Because the federally managed lands, they aren't allowing any cutting at all, and the state lands are there allowing select cutting of the trees. So you're not getting that increase, that buildup of underbrush and dry dead wood at the base in the forest, because it's a naturally maintained forest will burn, but it's a quick burn. In fact, many of those seeds for those trees require that they be scorched before they germinate.
Well, A lot of this is bringing up four or five different issues, but if I would jump off the train and deal with the federal controlling the land, here in, like, Southern California, you know, we have federal land, and, like, if I leave my city in Covina and I drive 20 miles up into the mountains, it's federal land, and then on federal land I can pull out my gun, and I can walk around and protect myself from the bears. But if I was in the L.A. County area, I can't. Same thing if I go out to the desert. Mojave Desert is controlled by the federal government. I can go out there and target practice. I can shoot my gun. I can set up targets and shoot all day. But if I go in the county area controlled by California, I can't. So, like, when you get into the federal area, you have more freedom.
But are there counties in California that are less... Is that state law you're talking about, L.A. County, or is that just county law? If you were to go to another,
What's
that?
About gun restrictions. That's California.
So you can't, in the state of California, you can't target practice. There's in a state park in California.
That's
state law, not federal law. That's state law, and then it's regulated by the county, and depending on the area of California that you're in. Because if you go out to the more rural or country parts of California, the laws are a little bit different. But that's a state law.
Okay. All right. 334. Are you there?
That's Alabama.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
So what's your take on this, my libertarian friend?
Well, I'm not a libertarian, but I don't know. I feel like if someone has rights, you're talking about the Nevada situation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like if he had rights and the state just says, you know what, we're going to change our minds, we're going to, then he either, I don't know, I don't think the state, the government should have the right to force someone to either sell or just say, you know, we're not even going to pay you, we're just going to take them, which is, that's the situation. If I buy something from the state today, if I buy something and I own it, like a car or anything, the government should not have the right to come in and just tell you, you know what, we changed our mind, you don't own this no more, we're going to give it to so-and-so, so-and-so, we're going to give it to the federal government, which is another party. I don't think that, and that's his case when he's talking to Glenn Beck, that's what he was saying, that now the state is saying, well, no, it's going to the government. Of course the state's going to say that because the government giving them money. And they, you know, in a lot of these states, bankrupt right now. So they're going to be like, yeah, on the government side. But that doesn't mean that they're right just because the state is saying it or just because the federal. It doesn't make no difference. If I own something and I haven't sold it, it should still be mine. Come hell or high water, I don't care what happened. Now, in certain instances, now, when you're talking about slavery, of course, then that's a different situation. That's a human being. That's different. He has rights as well. But when you're talking about land rights or property outside of that, then you can't just come in and just take it. And that's what the Constitution was talking. That's why he's talking about the Constitution. Now, he's going to be hard-pressed to find a real good judge that's going to probably be fair like that, but fair is fair. The government doesn't have that right, and they can't just take it. And then on top of that, they're not really doing anything with the land. They just don't want him to have his cows on it. Like, it's not like it's some wildlife thing they're looking at. Those cows aren't affecting the turtles or whatever they're supposed to be protecting. So it's just a power move. It really is. So
the question is, who is to decide and how is disputes supposed to be resolved? Because if disputes are supposed to be resolved in a legal matter, then that's one thing. But if the disputes are supposed to be resolved, or if me and Alabama have a dispute, and the way we do resolve it is if I bring a posse of armed people and then you bring a posse of armed people, and then we decide on the spot who's right or wrong, that's chaos.
I agree with you
in
one way, Covina
man,
but also, I mean, you have to look at the Declaration of Independence. I mean, you have to look at those words too. I mean, but we're nowhere near being beat up on by the federal government the way the founders were at the time of the Revolution. We're not at that position. We still have some representation. We just refuse to use our vote to make that representation do what we want it to do.
Wait a minute. Why would you say that, Sticks? I mean, they were taxing those people like at a fraction of what we're getting taxed at now. So I mean,
right.
Yeah, that's what I got to say.
That's
right.
Not really what it was about. So what are you saying?
Well, I'm saying they had no representation in Parliament whatsoever. At least we still elect our congressmen, senators, and president. But the problem is we are not demanding with our vote that those people do what we want. We should demand as a people that the Congress stop funding the EPA. If the EPA is going to act like this, the Congress holds the purse strings. The House of Representatives holds the purse strings.
Wait.
And if they really wanted, and if they, what?
I can't believe you're saying it because the Congress has not really held the purse strings for the last 100 years. It's been the Federal Reserve. They're the ones that's really controlling what goes where. So it doesn't. They say it, but that's not it. The people have not really had any true representation in hundreds of years. I mean, we get those trinkets that fall through every once in a while that go to the people. For the most part, the government is a rogue government right now. I mean, it's all we can hope for is an Article 5 convention. And that's it. I don't see any other way around it. That's just my personal opinion.
I agree with you. I mean, we need a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution. We also need term limits in the Constitution. We also need – have you read Levin's book, Liberty Amendments, Alabama?
No, I hadn't read it, but he was against it for a while. Now he joined it. These talk radio guys, some of them are kind of paid off. Some of this stuff is just legit. I'm like, come on, man, you can't tell me you're against it.
Well, the thing about Levin is, for one thing, he's very knowledgeable on the Constitution, and he worked in the government sector on these kinds of matters before he was a talk radio guy. But the thing about another amendment that he proposes is that no federal agency can create a regulation that costs more than $5,000 without direct approval of Congress. Now that would definitely put a tourniquet on the out of control alphabet soup of federal agencies.
I mean, that's just takes out right to Congress. That takes people's right. These organizations are created by Congress. They come in and they do stuff. That it's by proxy. They don't have to actually pass the laws. All they got to do is create an organization that's not elected, and they do whatever they want to do through the organization, and it looks like, hey, I didn't do it. The EPA did it. The IRS did it. So
A fellow by the name of John Silvera wrote a very good book called The Coming American Dictatorship, and he thinks it's already here, and it's in our bureaucracy. Congress has allowed themselves through the alphabet soup of federal agencies to make themselves irrelevant. Because now you have agencies like the EPA that can create regulation with the rule of law that nobody voted on and created by unelected people, unaccountable people.
I don't think they're irrelevant. I think they're an integral part of the functioning of all these organizations. I think that the Congress is rogue. Washington is no good. It's time to pull the plug and go ahead and have a convention. If they don't do that, I don't know who these states are that's holding out. I can see California, maybe Illinois and New York. Those are the only three. The rest
you're reminding
of them,
me of Rick.
I don't see who's against that.
You know, you're reminding me of Rick Perry right about now, and I got to say that I'm really vibing with you over here. I mean, I'm hearing a lot of what you're saying. I'm feeling the emotion, the sincerity, as well as the moral correctness. I mean, in just your little five-minute soliloquy, you've got more morality. You've surpassed the moral level of the virtual whole of the Congress right now. So you really have my compliments right now.
Let me inject here. I still don't get an answer to, who is to resolve the disputes. That's one. And the second one, if you're talking about an Article 5 convention, which has never been done before, you don't have...
Hey, Kavina, I don't want to cut you off, but we're going to go to break here. We'll pick you up right after the break.
Let him talk. I want to hear. Go ahead, Kavina.
Yeah, I was going to say, in order to do an Article 5 convention, you know, you would need,
it's three quarters. They just added Georgia a few months ago. So,
right. So
it's getting up there.
I'm saying, so you don't have, it's got 50 states, what you need, 40? 38 or 40 states. So I don't know what's the exact number. You don't have that many red states.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the blue states that are holding out, once they realize that the government is not coming, the only reason they're holding out is because they say we can't do that, because if we pull the plug, the government won't be able to write us a check and bail us out from all this mess we've created. So it's like some of these states, you go, the money ain't there. It's just not coming. And I'm not, look, my thing is, I think this country needs to step back and have some rein in on the power of Congress and the Senate and in Washington. It's just, dude, 90% of this country is not for Washington. So it's only a few people in these key states that's holding these states. You can go to New York, I guarantee you most people a dog and talk about Washington and say it's not this, it's not that. So I just don't see how, even though those blue states are blue, I guarantee you there's probably a majority of those people in those states that think that Washington needs to be reined in on its power.
They wouldn't be blue states if that was the case. They wouldn't even be a blue state. That doesn't make any sense. The people who want to change the Constitution are the people who are giving up on democracy. Not the people who believe.
Well, hold. This is the thing, Covina. The problem is, once they pass this at this convention, all 50 states are going to have to ratify it. So nothing's crazy going to get through there. You can nominate something to be put on the Constitution and say, hey, we're going to take all the black people's property. It's not going to make, you know what I'm saying? You can't, all 50 states have to come into it. So some of this stuff is just, it's only going to be smart, legitimate things. Like, I think term limits is the number one thing. In certain spending, balanced budget amendments, certain things are going to come through that are going to make sure that it at least solidifies the stability of the country. Now, you got people like the Federal Reserve, and they don't want this, because if that happens, it kind of hurts their power. So the real government, which is the Federal Reserve, is not, they're the ones that's holding this back. Not, you can't tell me, I bet I go to California and talk to Hispanics. They probably think Washington is screwed up, even though they come over here getting free stuff, most of them, over in Cali. But that's just how.
Well, that's just speculation, but I'm just saying that the way, my understanding and analysis of the political situation is that people who believe in democracy want to make the country work. People who are against democracy and want oligarchies some type of Kingston or just, you know, just basic oligarchies or something. That's the people who want to change the Constitution to allow that type of stuff.
But you can't, what I'm saying is the way it was set up, the way they set it up when they wrote it, it's hard to come in and do something real crazy. Like, I've heard this, but it doesn't make sense when all 50 states have to ratify.
Hey, guys, we're back.
Go ahead.
Hey, we're back. Covina, man, what was your thought that you had before we left?
I'll see if I can remember what it was. I was talking about the article. I think it was the Article 5.
Article 5 convention, yeah.
So somebody in the chat room has said, you know, you need 35 states to agree. And I was saying I don't see that there aren't 35 red states that want to change the Constitution. Because I think that the most blue state people believe in representative democracy, which is ends up being against quote unquote liberty, you know, whatever that means. So it's democracy or liberty, and I think that the blue states would probably stick with democracy.
But the problem with a straight democracy is it always devolves into mob rule. You know, Ben Franklin said a democracy is two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for supper. And that's the problem with a straight democracy. That's why they set up the Constitution and our representative republic the way it is. And we've allowed it to be watered down. One of the worst things that we did was we passed, I think it was the, I can't remember which amendment it was, the one that took the, went to popular election of senators. That removed all restraint of the federal government by the states, because up to that point, senators were chosen by the state legislatures in almost all the states. There were a few states that had popular election of senators within their state, but the majority had, it was a political appointment by the state legislature.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. I think that, like, in red states, I'm figuring in my political analysis of the situation, red states people, they want, in their terms, liberty. And liberty is, individual control of everything, privatizing. That's why, I guess somebody had snuck in, they wanted to, why don't they sell the property to the guy, whatever, individualize everything. But instead of having, public beaches like we have in California, just privatize them where, only the rich people can go to the beach or stuff like that. So that in a democracy, we would say, no, we want the beach to be public so everybody can have a chance to go, state parks and everything. That's the opposite of liberty. And I think the blue states have that kind of – let me just finish. I'm almost done. The blue states have that kind of a mindset that they want the people to control – the things instead of just the rich and the elite.
But what about? I mean, what about the argument that when everybody owns something, nobody owns it? I mean, and I can understand public county beaches. I can understand. I mean, the problem with control of this stuff, and that's what the Western states are arguing against, is we know best how to manage this land, and not a bureaucrat from D.C. That's the biggest argument. Do you think somebody in D.C. could manage the beaches in California?
There's a lot to be said for privatization, is Stix's point, and I'm inclined to agree with him. The other thing is that democracy is the very thing that has led to these very debacles, like what's going on in the Bundy situation out there. Democracy has led to this very thing. This is anathema to the Republican construct that the Founding Fathers had in mind. There is no way you'd have this kind of bureaucratic entanglement and these prolonged intrusions on people's rights, enumerated or implied, if state sovereignty were more the norm, as opposed to this central government that's broad, bloated, and exponentially more intrusive than that which compelled our ancestors to rebel against the crown. What are your thoughts on that?
I would tend to agree. My political analysis of the situation, I would tend to agree that that's the way the people on the right and the liberty movement see things. They see things as, if you have public land, then the public get to decide. They don't want that. They want it in the hands of the elite rich. Some people will call them the Illuminati. I don't use those stupid terms. But some people say that the rich people, if they control everything, then they get to decide, what the land is and who come on and who can do what. But as long as democracy and representation, as long as that's still alive, then people still have life left.
Covina,
but
that's
the
not
people...
fair, though. If you own something, Covina, then it's fair for you to be able to keep it as long as you see fit until you want to sell it. That's what the Constitution is talking about, property rights. No, the government should not be able to come and take something from you, namely your income, which is we're going to get into that. But they shouldn't be able to take anything from people. The government comes and decides, the state government decided, it's beneficial for us to allow the federal government to come in here. Because we're in a tight situation financially. We mismanaged the money, so we need this money. So we're going to go out, and we're going to get the federal government to come in here and take this property. But this guy has rights, but he doesn't own a deed, but he has certain rights to that land. And the federal government came in like, no, we're going to take it. And I'm just saying, there's a slippery slope, especially as an African-American. When you start getting into property, we need to be careful, because I look at... that's one of the biggest arguments for reparations to me when I look at the Wilmington, North Carolina, Tulsa, Oklahoma, certain cities where the government came in and took property from people. Those people are owed something based on the Constitution. You owe, this is not right. They either need to get their property back or they need to be fairly, more than fairly compensated for what was done. Your goods, the money earned for goods and services rendered, is revenue. So that by itself, indentured service slavery, that's why I believe in reparations, because this is property and you have rights. And the government shouldn't be able to come out because the majority thinks it's better for us not to have something. And there was a time when the majority wanted us to be in chains. So we need to be careful about property rights. That's all. I just don't, I'm very sensitive about rights. Black people should be sensitive about rights. I don't care, even if it is for a wealthy person. It doesn't make a difference. Rights are rights, man. Because I'm telling you, they'll take stuff from you. They will. They have and are taking things from us. And I think it's wrong. The government is a bully, man. The IRS is a bully organization. It just is.
My question is, you know, you three gentlemen, you know, on the line here, somebody answer this question. My question is, who is to resolve this dispute?
Who is to resolve the dispute? My perspective, and I'm going to maintain this, what we have to do, it starts at the grassroots level. Now, we all know the government that governs best is that which governs least. It starts at the grassroots level. What we have to do is we have to put the moral seaworthiness of the law or the precedent on trial. I bristle a little bit about that, but I see the need for it for the following reason. The Forest Reserve Act was signed in 1891. The president, that law empowered the president to seize lands in the public domain for use as national parks. We're dealing with a situation that is nowhere near benign, nowhere near as benign as that. And the president at the time, I ruefully admit, was my own cousin, President Benjamin Harrison. But his position was benign and altruistic. What we're dealing with now is a complete departure or declension from the implied moral dictums of government. And that's where we're at right now.
And according to Judge Napolitano, this is a real estate dispute, and real estate disputes should be settled in state court, not federal court. So that's and Mr. Bundy, to his discredit, it's my understanding when he went to court, he represented himself, which is never a good idea.
No, not at
well,
all.
Well, one of the smart things, one of the things that I think he's have an uphill battle against, it's to the state's benefit for him to lose this property, lose his rights. So he's kind of going to the guy that has the, it's like these things. You're going to the state, and the state is going to fight against itself. It's kind of,
quiet.
That's the problem.
What?
We don't have any, I have quiet. A problem with, the Constitution gave us checks and balances against the politics, against the government. Now we don't have that because they're changing it and making all these remixes and doing anything and everything they feel like doing. And
that's the market for you.
Yeah, they can't
but,
just fight.
But what,
you can't
why
just
are
go
you
in
saying...
and say, okay, we're going to go to state court. I mean, I understand that's the only entity that's out there that's able to do it. But I'm just saying that if the state sees where they can get money by letting the federal government come in and use it for to help some turtles, they're going to do that because they need the money.
But the thing is, see, I don't follow your line of thinking, because the thing is, if the state got the land back, then the state would get the revenue from any development or any utilization of any natural resources on that land instead of the federal government. That's what the other Western states are complaining about.
Is
the government?
That's what
the other Western states are arguing to regain that land from the federal government, because the government is putting it off. Limits from forestry, mining and drilling, and the states are saying, listen, we could use the revenue from those royalties and develop this land. And the government's putting it. What's that?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That you guys are going down to the grassroots and stuff like that, and somebody's want to change it. But the way the law currently exists, the current law says they go to the court and they resolve the dispute, and Bundy went to the court three times. He lost. The court order said he had 45 days to remove his cattle, pay his fees or else the government had was going to come in and remove the cattle. So the government comes in, follows the court order. Bundy's not following court orders. He doesn't believe in the government. The government follows the court order, comes in, hires a crew to remove the cattle. And then the grassroots, like Eric said there, the grassroots decided, well, we don't also recognize the court. We're going to go in grassroots. We're going to get a militia and come in and stop the government from following the court order.
They had no right to take his cattle.
That was in the court order. That was
Jeff.
Still in the court order. You can have a disagree, but it was in the court order. The court said they go, after 45 days, the government had a right to remove the cattle. That was in the court order.
Okay, can I talk to you then?
Go ahead, Jeff.
Go ahead, bro. Go ahead, Jeff.
Thank you, because I've been waiting all this time to listen to this craziness. Once again, they had no right to take the cattle, regardless of whether the court ordered it, because they have the right to attach their bank accounts. They have to get their revenue. They can move his cattle and put them back on his property. Those are his cattle. They cannot take his cattle. They don't belong to them. They killed those cattle. They killed half that herd and buried them. And here it is again. You have the foolishness of a federal government that is overreaching and overstepping its bounds that has to be stopped. Because you have these progressives in place. Why let you shoot on federal land? Why? Because there's nobody up there. That's what they're doing up there. There's nothing up there. They don't allow anything. So you're looking at a bad, awkward situation here that you have to stop. This is not what what this intention was for. And when you leave all moral turpitude behind, your government is going to run amok, and you've given it all its power. The states need to take that land back now. It is their land. They have no problem with this stupid little turtle they're talking about. The turtle is overpopulating, and the cows don't bother him. So he was paying his grazing rights to the state, but he refused to pay them to the federal government because he felt the federal government was illegal in how they obtained ownership of that land, even after his family had owned it and paid rights on it 150 years ago. So now you want to turn all this stuff over, Doc, and you want to live in a police state. Well, so be it. You live in that police state. I'm not going to do it. I fight with the Bundys, and I fight. I fight with them.
Whoa, we're going to break, Jeffrey.
Yeah. Jeff, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, I was saying, Jeff. I was asking Jeff. How is the dispute supposed to be resolved then?
You take it in state court and see what, and that's how you resolve. They should have taken the money or attached his bank accounts, not his cattle. Those cattle are now the beef prices are up like they are. You're gonna go ahead and mess up 1,200 head of them, kill them, and put them in mass graves. Does that make sense to you?
Jeff, the court order did say he had 45 days to remove the cattle. He didn't do it.
That's what I'm saying.
You don't care about the court.
I don't hate government, but I hate government overreach. And that's what they're doing. They're overreaching the government. I mean, the people. This is not a country all for and by the people anymore. It's a country all for and by the government. And they are taking over, and that is wrong. You can't have a democracy, because all you have to do is have an idiot like this one that just popped the XL pipeline, pay everybody to go vote, and then they vote you back in slavery. How about that? And then they don't have to vote you because you're voting yourself back into it just by the way that you vote. But once again, they vote you back in slavery into a subservient position here in the United States with no chance of rising again. And then what you going to argue there?
Jeff, this is Alabama. I want to interject something. Covina, man, you ever heard of that book called A Capitalist Nigga?
What? Yes, sir.
You need to check that book out, man. You read it?
No, I haven't read that one, but I understand the principles.
It's written by an African, but just check the guy from Nigeria. I'm reading through it now, but
it brings in a lot of different stuff, man. I think we make a lot of excuses for government a lot of times to do things. The government isn't always on your side. The government has, in certain instances, benefited African Americans, but there was always a back door for you to be exploited. Just as soon as they do something on the front to make it seem like they're doing something for you, they exploit you on the back end. So it's never just being straight, okay, we're going to do something to benefit you, and that's it and that's it. That's why the term minority came into play when they start issuing out rights. Instead of just Negro rights.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Jeff, one of the situations, this is a parallel of an event that was in the Bible. Ahab and his wife, when Ahab went down to take over the vineyard, this is the same identical thing that's going on now. And that's the thing that you should refer to. God says he wasn't right.
Was there a court order in the Bible?
Yeah, absolutely. When God speaks,
well, there you go.
That is the ultimate.
Exactly. Well, when the court order speaks, that's the ultimate right there.
Yeah,
we don't
when God speaks, not man-made court. When God speaks, that is the ultimate. And
sorry,
see, we're not considering the fact that this case has already been settled by God.
Sir, what year did that occur?
What year did the earth begin?
No, I'm just asking you a question about you.
Well, I'm asking you a question.
I have no idea.
I don't either.
Okay, so I'm just talking about. So I don't know about the other stuff. We don't know about the one that you're talking about. I don't know the one that happened last year. There was a court order that said he had 45 days, and it expired, and they was gonna remove the cow. So the only law we've got to recognize is the one that we know when it occurred.
The only law that you should recognize is the law of righteousness.
Nobody can.
Any law that is not right should not be recognized.
Well, that's good. Hallelujah, and Pastor, because you say I don't really care about that. I'm just talking about the actual law that we actually live under.
But why do we live under unjust laws?
I know you tell me, dude.
We live under unjust laws because of greedy people who are ruling over many.
I don't have a dispute for something in somebody's opinion. I'm just talking about the actual facts. I like to stick with facts and data, real information, not somebody's opinion or how they praise God. I don't really care about your opinion and how you praise God. I'm just looking at the facts. And when I ask a question about how do you resolve a dispute, that's the actual question I need an actual answer for, not faith-based whatever.
But don't they refer back to laws that has already worked?
No, they don't. They just go to the facts that's on the
case. You got a losing battle.
You're correct.
Well, when you got a losing battle, there's nothing to say. And
exactly.
we just have to put up with this losing situation that everybody, like some lady was talking on the radio about a week or so ago about how they are seizing land in California. This is going worldwide. They're putting everybody, all the poor people in the city. And there was a movie that was out, Charlton Heston. I can't think of it right offhand. But Soylent Green. What's happened in Soylent Green is actually happening worldwide right now. I don't know whether you saw that movie or not. But
of course
I did. It foretold just what you guys are discussing today.
Weekdays from 9 to noon, the show that stimulates your mind on the issues of the day. Call the show at 347-945-5229 or toll free at 1-800-530-WSOM. That's 347-945-5229 or 1-800-530-WSOM. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
And we're back. This is Tracy and Friends, 347-945-5229, if you want to talk to us. The Sticks is here running the board, and we got Eric here in studio with us. On the phone, we have Kavina Man, we've got our friend Jeff Green, and we've got Alabama. So go ahead, Eric.
Morning, guys. I just want to give a quick shout-out here to my good friend, Miss Mary Mason. She's a New Jersey State Police officer out of Ventnor, New Jersey. And she's a fan of Tracy and Friends, good conservative lady, and I just want to thank her for her friendship and her support of our political ministry, which is what it is. You know, I want to, you know, I've been hearing you men talk, and I've been hearing some very strong arguments being tossed hither and thither, and I want to just cite this little statistic for you. The TSA. How many agents of the TSA have been arrested since 2003 for theft? 400. The other question is, how many terrorists have been caught by the TSA since that time? Not a single one. So I say that to say this. These bureaucratized agencies don't work. They don't serve their purposes. They really don't.
Well, they become behemoths. I mean, they just live off of their own They exist to serve themselves. Because in every case, what you have is you have somebody making $100,000 a year as a federal worker, and you got the guy coming up behind him that wants that job, so they're not going to make the agency smaller. In fact, they're going to push to make the agencies larger.
It negates the purpose of the rule of law.
Yes. Yes.
Sticks, I was on an IT project for the Air Force recruiting database, FSR, and my first week there, one of the servers, we were just starting a new project, the server broke, right? So I went on the internet, found the exact same server for about like $2,000. We needed two of them, so it's going to be about $4,000, right? The guys came in. They were threatening to fire me. My brother told me, said, don't say anything. His brother has been in it for... The way it worked, they went out and bought two $40,000 servers from HP. Bought brand new servers. Now, did they have a contract with HP? Maybe, maybe so. But the objective was to get the job done. The guy had warranties on the servers. Why would you go and buy $80,000, spend $80,000 of taxpayers' dollars to get two servers when you could have got them for $4,000? That's government. That's government right there. There was this guy that was on a case. It was a Judge Judy or whatever. And the guy was like, yeah, the government pays me $500 a month for rent because I'm a college student. He's staying with this female and not paying her anything. And she was saying, well, why did you, if you're not giving her that money for rent, why did you sign up for the program? He's like, well, because I need it, because I'm me, because I'm fly. Government, sometimes they do things backwards. Instead of writing a rent check to an place where he lives, they just write the check out to the guy. He's going to go spend it. Stupid.
Yep.
That's government. That's government.
Yep. Well, the problem with government purchases are they're all third-party purchases. You know, when people are spending their own money for themselves, they're pretty careful with how they spend it. That's a first-party purchase. Second-party purchase is when you're buying something for someone else with your money, which you're still going to be pretty careful on how you spend that money. A third-party purchase is when you're spending somebody else's money on somebody else. And in that case, most people aren't really careful about how they spend that money. I mean, and another thing with government agencies is if they don't spend their money this year, they get a budget cut for next year. So at the end of the year, there's always a flurry of spending to spend what's left over in the budget. Right, Jeff?
Jeff, you still with us?
1848.
He's probably muted.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because
Jeff was, well, yeah, Jeff was a state worker. I mean, he understands how all that works. But what's your take on that, Kavina?
I have similar experience. I find that same thing and what what Alabama had just said.
Mm-hmm. So wouldn't it be, I mean, wouldn't it be better if we would curtail these? I mean, the thing about government is the best government is the government that is closest to the people that it's serving. And there's no way that somebody in D.C. can understand how to manage those lands in the West. They need to be managed at the county or state level.
I think that if that was something that was in dispute, then there's a way to go about resolving that issue. The problem is that has nothing to do with Bundy. Bundy was a guy that didn't want to pay his fees. He doesn't recognize the government, and that's a singular issue. Bundy and the government and the fees is a singular issue. All these other people are putting their own grievances with the government onto his case and trying to make it a general fight against the government. I think that's kind of wrong.
There is some truth to that statement. There are people there. I mean, Mr. Bundy himself has publicly asked for nonviolence. He's looking at this as a civil rights fight. And he's looking at it as a states' rights fight. He's tried to pay his fees to the state. The state won't accept them. And it's my understanding that the back fees are all escrowed. So it's not that he didn't want to pay them. He just didn't like the fact that the contract was changed in the middle of the game.
He doesn't recognize, as he said many times, he doesn't recognize the government.
That's the thing, though. The government can do that because they're the government. They're almighty and all-powerful.
That's
the problem I have. That's the problem I have right there. We're the almighty, powerful government. We know you hold it for 200 years, but we don't feel like doing it. We're going to change it. Now we want to do this. And if you don't do this, we're going to take it. Who's going to come stop you? Nobody. That's how they feel. So when the people stood up to them, I was glad to see it. Now, is it every... You can always, the state is going to say in documentation, yeah, I feel like he shouldn't lose, they're going to have a reason why he should lose the property, because they're the government. That's just like if the government was a person. It's like we're going and read what the person said in defense of why they should take something from someone else. Fair is fair. Property, really,
property,
I think,
right?
This is my personal opinion. I think the property really, property, for people owning property, should be a God-given right. If you own your property, then God has saw fit to allow you through your abilities to be able to acquire that property. Man, I'm not talking about people. But in any area, you acquire that property, the government cannot come and sever that from you unfairly, unjustly. And I feel like that's unfair. If he owns it and he hasn't decided to sell it, then it should remain in his ownership.
Well, yeah, and see, the original draft of the Declaration of Independence said life, liberty, and property. But it was changed, the anti-slavery people changed it to pursuit of happiness because they didn't want property to be in the Declaration of Independence and because they wanted to be able to do away with slavery. That's why it was removed. But the original draft had life, liberty, and property.
You know, Sticks, that's a good point. I'm thinking of the one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, a very devout Presbyterian by the name of Dr. Benjamin Rush.
Yes.
He was he trained a couple of thousand people for that ministry, and in those days the medical profession was seen largely as just that, you know, as much holistic as it was chemical. And he was at the forefront of the very first abolitionist movement in this country, or emancipationist, you want to call it. He was at the helm of that for the better part of 40 years.
Yeah, I believe slavery was supposed to be outlawed in the United States like 20 years after the signing of the Constitution, wasn't it? There was legislation that was done, and it was later repealed by Democrats.
Well, that was such a hot-button issue that a lot of people think, oh, 1860s, 1860s. Well, the first time a major secessionist movement came afoot was the Hartford Convention of 1815, and one of the promulgators there was Timothy Pickering, who was the White House Chief of Staff during the Washington administration. So that was always a hot-button issue, and that took on as many economic nuances. It took on more moral nuances in 1815 than it did initially in the 1860s under President Lincoln.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I mean, we've got a long history of trying to do away with slavery that people don't even realize.
But it was never fully eradicated. It just took on different nuances.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was revived under LBJ's Great Society. It really was. I'm sorry. But, you know, just like the Democratic plantation owner in the antebellum South has been supplanted by the Democratic activist in American society today with overseers like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, pardon the Freudian slip.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, you know, I don't know what you do with incarcerated people to keep them occupied, but we shouldn't have state-run factories, incarcerated people, making a profit. I mean, that smacks.
I don't see nothing wrong with it. I say pay them. I say pay the people. If the guy's indentured and you're really trying to hit him, not indentured, if he's incarcerated and you're really trying to rehabilitate, why not escrow that money so that when he gets out, he can take that money and rebuild it? He can't vote. He can't get a job. Why not take that money and use it for at least so he can get a job when he gets out?
I would be all for that. Absolutely. I mean, it's insane what we do to our released prisoners in this country. You know, and we've talked about this a lot. You can't drive a semi truck if you're a convicted felon. I don't understand that. In Ohio, you can't cut hair if you're a convicted felon. I mean, you've taken people, they paid their debt to society. And if you go to prison or you go to jail, when you come out of jail, you should be free of any restrictions because you have you paid your debt to society. And I would even go so far for a nonviolent offender, 5 years, I'd give them their right back to own a firearm.
Yeah,
and
also
if a person is in jail and they're working at a factory somewhere, that person, if they're working, pay them $5 an hour. Let them save it up. He's working 30 hours a week, so however. Let him go ahead and take that money when he gets out. That's what a lot of times it's for economic reasons that people go back into selling drugs or go back into because they don't have the money. And then they got a plan, and you spend time in business classes. And that's how you would help people when they get out. So when they get out, they got money, they saved up, they got a plan, they can hit the ground running. But if you just lock a guy up, siphon him off his labor, take it, put the money in certain people's pocket for profit, and then he gets out, he doesn't have 50 cents, he's on child support, what's he going to do? He's going to go right back in jail for child support. Well, I mean, it's kind of, I don't know. I mean, I know a guy that this is his exact, that was his exact situation. He got out, didn't have anything, and wound up going back in because he didn't have any other, couldn't get a job. He worked for me for a while, but I can only have so many houses for him to do. After a while, he started selling weed, went back into jail. But he was calling me like, man, I got to do something about this child support. I don't need to get behind. My parole officer threatening me. What was he supposed to do? He couldn't get a job, though. So when he started selling, he in a small town, everybody knows everybody. As soon as he started selling, maybe 2-3 weeks later, he got locked up.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah. Oh, I understand. What do you think about that, Tracy?
Here I am. When it comes to incarceration, people need to really understand that it needs to be changed. It needs to be revamped. There are some people that should not, that need to be monitored. But when a man pays his debt to society, then they ought to be free and clear. I believe that. Now, I know that Governor Kasich is really, really trying to work on, and at the end, I'm not quite sure if he's done it or not. I'll have to look it up.
30.
I know he's working on common sense initiatives that will stop people from, that will allow, let me say, allow people who for reentry to come back and to get jobs as truck drivers and to get jobs as barbers and jobs that they were excluded from. He said it didn't make any sense either. So I believe that he's been working on that. I'm not quite sure if it's passed the legislature yet. But I know
we're going to break,
on
Tracy.
It.
I'll talk to you on the other side.
Talk to you a little bit.
That shouldn't even be an issue, though. You shouldn't have an issue of a guy being able to get a job or cut his hair. Like, that should be. Why do you have to pass legislation? The guy should have been
but
able
you,
to cut
because,
hair.
Because the law was, if you have to reverse it, and remember, a lot of this was done during the Jim Crow areas and beyond. They weren't trying to get people emancipated. They were trying to incarcerate people and keep them incarcerated.
Well, it's funny you say that because there's this book I just saw. I think I'm going to start reading about after slavery. It's called Slavery by Another Name. And it was about a lot of guys, like if a black guys, they'll see them standing around. They'll lock you up for loitering. You'll go work in some factory for the next 20 years until you die working for some guy just because you were standing outside and the cops came up. It's real crazy. Real crazy. And I'm talking about this is rampant. This was done rampantly, like all over the country, where they see black people, they'll just take them and lock them up for some small charge, and that's their lives are ruined, and they probably won't ever get out.
I mean, Hurricane Carter passed away, and I probably should bring this up on air. Hurricane Carter passed away for killing, for being accused of killing people. I think he was incarcerated something like 18 years. He passed away on yesterday. And he was a gentleman who was a fighter, but he was in the civil rights movement. And they incarcerated him, and they treated him like, you know, they treated him like he had done something when he hadn't. And it happened so many times because, remember, for so long, you were guilty until proven innocent. And then if you were proven innocent, you were still guilty because you were black.
That's why I'm all for, like, I keep saying reparations. To me, I don't see how anybody could be against it, just because it's not just slavery. I mean, it's just a lot of different things that were done so that
you can hold. Right.
Because if I take you, like Tracy, if I take you right now, tell you you can't work above, you can't work, you can't do this, you can't do that, and I do that to your children, your grandchildren, and your great-grandchildren, and then I come back 100 years from now, and look at you and say, hey, why can't you pull yourself up? That, to me, is just the fallacy of it.
But this is the issue, and you and I disagree on this wholeheartedly. When you look at reparations, and you think that we ought to be given money, if we're given money in the same mindset that we're already given,
for the let me finish.
The only thing we will do is make another man rich. And unless we actually change our methodology, our paradigm, and our way of thinking, we will never make it.
I'm about to go upstairs. This is my last point. The thing is, let's see. Okay, I hear what you're saying. That doesn't negate the fact that it's warranted, regardless of the fact it is warranted. And on top of that, you give me my money, give me my whatever, and let me help you. Let me worry about what I'm going to do with my money. Because I ain't going to give it to nobody.
But you're one of the few. And remember, we're trying to resolve a problem. We're not trying to create a different one we're trying to resolve it. And the resolve will not come from just putting money out on it. There's been billions of dollars.
I wasn't saying give everybody $100,000 and that's it. I was just saying it could be for business. If you're trying to start a business, these are the benefits we'll give you. We'll give you a guaranteed loan and we'll do X, Y, Z, no taxes, whatever. This could be that way. Everybody that's going in is already on that mindset. Because that's not what can't done.
WSOM 347-945-5229 or toll free at 1-800-530-WSOM. Online at TracyandFriends.com or 600WSOM.com.
And we're back. We're back from break. And Eric's here with me. That sticks here in the air chair. We've got Tracy on the phone, we've got Alabama on the phone, and we've got a new caller, 212.
Hey, this is Eric in Warren Sticks. How's it going, man?
Hey, Eric number two.
Yeah.
Doing well.
Yeah, but I agree with you, man, on that whole prison thing. Yeah, you're right. It's some of those laws, the fact that those guys can't vote, they can't get a license to cut hair, it's ridiculous. And nobody, no lawmaker can explain why it is.
I can, you know, the reason why it is, the reason why it was, remember, a lot, there were a lot of laws enacted during Jim Crow. And then there were some that were enacted because of the transportation. The rationale behind the truck driving was because of the trafficking of the drugs. So they told them if you didn't have a CDL, you couldn't move drugs in a semi-truck from one place to another. Agree with it or disagree with it. But what I'm saying is things have changed. We found out that we've done things wrong. The same thing is with the cocaine, the powder cocaine versus the crack cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
You made a mistake. It was wrong. Let's make amends of it.
I mean, that's the problem with one size fits all and zero tolerance policies is they allow everybody to put their brain in park.
I think the knee jerk reaction. What happens? It's the same thing when you look at going into Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
We should have gone. Don't get me wrong, but the way we went was not right because it was a knee jerk reaction based upon emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we have to be honest about when it comes to how America does things. We're good at doing knee-jerk reactions, and we don't know what to do, so we come up with crazy things, but we're too proud to say we were wrong.
Yeah, look at what happened in Iraq. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. when you're watching 9/11 and watching those buildings burn and people jumping to them from the 115th floor because they got no other option, that's just taking a chord with you, you know? And you're going to mm-hmm. say things and do things that are irrational, I hate to say.
And that's true. And then you're going to make a legislation behind it that affects everyone, or you go to war, or you go to a fight. Everybody knows that you should not go into a fight emotional.
Well, you know, I mean, just look at what we've done with the sex offender laws. I mean, you have men who can't coach their kids' ball teams because their wife was underage by a year when he got her pregnant and married her. I mean, it's insane.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And instead of us amending the laws and doing something about the laws, we just hold them in place and keep people away from their families. We keep them away from their loved ones, and we do dumb things. We put them on a sex offender's list that shouldn't be there.
Well, you know, I mean, just look at the case down at down in Steubenville. It's my understanding that wasn't even that was a digital penetration, not an actual sexual act.
Yeah,
you're right.
And there's a guy up here rather recently. He just raped his 4-year-old stepdaughter. He got 5 years in prison. That's it.
We don't pay attention to this. And it hurts our society at large. But that
would
you say,
Eric? I was going to say, I was agreeing with you, Tracy, these zero-tolerance policies, if you will, these blanket laws, these so-called blanket prophylactics definitely threaten a logistical disconnect. They flag it. A very good friend of mine was dating a girl out there in Nevada, doing very well financially, emotionally. He was living the dream, but his stepdaughter, had this inordinate reliance on the acceptance of her biological father, decided to falsely accuse my friend of improper acts. And by the time it was all cleared up, he was just so destitute, he killed himself. He was so forlorn, he took his life. It was a sad thing, and he was one of the more likable guys in my graduating class from Mooney.
Wow.
And see, those are real stories based on real acts. And we don't pay attention to him because it hurts more than just him. It hurts a whole family. And when it comes to accusations, it's just like with domestic violence. I am not promoting that anyone be assaulted in their home domestically. But we have gone too far when it comes to chastising your child. But we've gone too far when it comes to, whoever yells first cries loudest.
And we've got a new caller, MSH. A-H.
Oh, good morning. I was just listening in. You guys, I think you're jumping around a lot of different subjects. I'm calling from Houston, Texas. My name is M.D. Shaheed. And I was just listening on the show again.
Okay.
You got a lot of different things. I guess, I mean, I heard something earlier about reparations maybe. And now I've heard something about sex offenders or violence in the home. And I guess the only comment I have is that I just see a lot of this, as particularly sex offenders, violence in the home. You can't whip your child. You know, I'm a teacher in the public school system. I've raised 6 children. And I can tell you, I knocked mine upside the head quite a few times. And, you know, I'm not that tall. You know, I'm about 5'8 and a half. My boy's about 6 feet, so they was a big dude. So, but, yeah, I agree. You know, the family should be given the opportunity once again to be able to manage their own household, particularly if they demonstrate that they know what they're doing, they understand their family ties, they have good relationships. And I just think sometimes I think a lot of these people out here particularly are just trying to destroy the family bond and just break everybody up in the individual. And that better way, you know, everybody can do their own thing. But, you know, the United States of America, which I'm born in and raised in, I love the country, we're going to have to realize sooner or later, and hopefully sooner, that this nation is not going to survive another 100 years without strong families. It's just not going to happen. And I don't know, we're some kind of void or vacuum figure that whatever happened to Rome, whatever happened to Greece, whatever happened to Egypt is not going to happen to us. Well, we're all human beings, and we all make the same mistakes sooner or later. So if it happened to them, it's probably going to happen to us the same way if we don't figure out what's really going on in this country.
Mr. Shaheed.
I'm great.
Mr.
Yes,
Shaheed.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Siddhu Biliyaka. I want to say that I agree with you, and it really, you know, this entire discussion, and you've really encapsulated it, brings to bear the important point that democracy doesn't work. Historically, we talk about Greece and Rome and Persia and Babylon and these other empires. You know, it's the declension from the traditional values that have led to the decline of every last one of the near major 30 civilizations that have flourished on this earth. And I'm paraphrasing the theologian, Reverend Dr. Francis Schaeffer. And democracies, as a rule, as a historical rule, have only lasted about 200 years. And you're right, Mr. Shaheed. We are not going to last long at this rate, in this pace, and in this mindset. You're right. It's,
yeah,
the bottom
yeah,
of the climb is a day I hope I don't live to see, but it's going to happen.
Yeah, you look at what happened in Egypt. I mean, they went from bad to really bad.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, if you really understand it, the United States of America, in its origin, in its organic form, is supposed to be a republic. I mean, it,
right.
It does say, it says, unto the nation by which it stands, one nation under God, to the republic. It doesn't say to the democracy.
Right.
It says to the republic.
Right.
And people don't
right.
understand the difference between a republic and a democracy. And my studies of the Federalist Papers and some other writings from some of the founders and some of the minds behind the establishment of the United States of America and its organic constitution clearly strongly suggest that they have studied other nations diligently and came to the conclusion that probably the best form of government at that time for the new America would be a republic. But, you know, because in a republic you have laws that you have to abide by. In a democracy, it's the crowd that runs it. If the tone of the people say we want to smoke crack cocaine, then in a democracy that's what goes. If everybody starts saying we want to smoke crack cocaine, then in a democracy that's what goes. But in a republic, you have laws, because sometimes the people can lose their sensibility too. And you got to have laws to keep nations standing. So, you know, everybody might wake up tomorrow and say, you know what, if you wasn't born before 1950, we want you out of the country. Well, if everybody is saying that, yeah, but I was born in 1980. I'm a United States citizen. Yeah, but that's the tone of the people. That's the problem with democracy. You can't always, the people don't always have the right sensibility. You have to have laws in place, or at least statutes in place, that will check and balance irrational thinking.
Yeah, democracy always devolves into mob rule. And that's what people don't understand. And people used to understand that. The first president to call this a democracy was Woodrow Wilson, and we all know what a wonderful president he was.
Mm. He's the one that signed that Federal Reserve Act into law. He basically took power from the government and put it in the hands of these big bankers, these international bankers.
Right, right. Woodrow Wilson
did a lot. People.
What's that?
He loved the people.
No, he didn't.
You really, when you talk about democracy, you're looking at a reign of terror, like in the French
right.
Revolution, and Robespierre, and all these different guys. It's going to turn into people. They don't behead people like that now. But I can see a mob getting crazy, going at the Bastille, following the Bastille, all this different stuff. That's what it came. It turned into just straight chaos.
Right. Right. I mean, well, look what's happening in Egypt now. You know, there's beheadings in Egypt right now. They're beheading Christians. But, you know, a democracy, we were never designed to be a democracy. It's always been a representative republic, and it was laid out in the manner in the Constitution it was laid out in was for a very specific reason. It was to make sure that you didn't have one branch of government with more power than any of the other two. And what we have allowed to happen pretty much over the last 100 years, actually it started with Teddy Roosevelt. He was really the first progressive president. And what we have done is we've created an imperial presidency where the president is allowed to operate on executive order without anybody challenging his authority. And we have a Congress that has authorized all this alphabet soup of federal agencies that are all under the executive branch, giving the executive branch even more power because they create regulation with rule of that has power of law, and nobody is controlling these people.
Hey, Sticks.
Yeah.
So why is it that we're not talking about the difference? We're not taught the difference between a republic and a democracy. And why is it that we don't understand it, and we've dumbed down the American people so much that the things that we're talking about right now in this conversation may be the first time that people have really heard the definition of them?
Yeah, because most people think that we are a democracy, period.
Tracy, may I answer that question for you?
Sure.
The answer is, in a word, control. Democracies, you know, a dumbed-down society is far more amenable to the vicissitudes generated by the whims of an imperialistic government. And, Six brought up an excellent point about it being Theodore Roosevelt. Theodore Roosevelt, I'll give him my respect. He was a great hunter. He was an NRA brother. But he had a slick side. People, you know, he was approached. His detractors, constitutionally-minded detractors, accused him of having usurped power. To which he slyly replied, quote, "I did not usurp power, but I did greatly broaden the use of executive power." And it's essentially the same thing. I mean, a lot
right.
of it is rooted in aggression and emotion. I mean, I look at the Jacksonian democracy model. A lot of democracy is rooted and promulgated by mean-spiritedness. I mean, when my cousin William Henry Harrison died, the following 26th of April, Jackson sits down and writes a letter to his good friend F.P. Blair saying that, quote, "A kind and overruling providence has interfered to prolong our glorious union and happy Republican system, which General Harrison and his cabinet were preparing to destroy following the dictates of the profligate demagogue Henry Clay. The Lord reigneth. Let our nation rejoice." End quote. Mean-spirited democracy.
See, presidents, by and large, up until T.R., figured if it wasn't specifically given a power given to them by the Constitution, they didn't have it. And Teddy Roosevelt did what he pleased and figured, let the courts figure it out later. And that's how we broadened the power. I mean, it's amazing the amount of land. Whoa, time for break.
I'm Harper Keegan with your headline news.
Hey, who's on here? Hello?
Yeah.
Hey, Eric.
Yeah, I'm here.
So how you doing?
I'm doing good. How was your Easter, Tracy?
It was wonderful. I tried to get some cleaning done that I didn't get done and went to see my family and called it a day.
Okay, yeah, I had a good Easter. I fired up the grill.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm.
It was a great day for it, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was a beautiful day. 72 out. So we had some burgers, some hamburgers, hot dogs, little beef ribs. That's about it.
So that sounds like a plan.
Yeah,
that sounds like a plan.
You know, everybody makes a ham, so I figured I'd just do something different this year.
And I'm with that. You know, I look at what's going on right now, but it's so spiritual right now. I look at the destruction of the family. When you destroy the family, there's no family time. There's no, we don't even correct our family. We just let them do whatever they want to do. And everybody just goes off into their own thing, and I either stay away.
Yes. It is.
Because I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
I truly don't understand.
I mean, growing up in the 80s, it was just, holidays was special. Families got together, and they made a point. We're getting together no matter what. We're going to have a good time.
The kids didn't run them up. You couldn't show up at grandma's house and cry.
Yeah.
I mean, you just didn't do that.
No.
You might get high when you leave. But you don't
show
up.
Well, you made sure you had some Visine.
Absolutely. And I'm, you know, I look around and I'm like, are y'all kidding me?
Mm-hmm. Just out doing whatever, walking down the middle of the street, busting a fag.
You couldn't even go to grandma's house. I mean, you couldn't. I mean, remember we had Afro picks and we would wear them in our hair.
Mm-hmm.
You had to take them out on holidays.
Yeah.
You know I ain't lying.
Oh yeah.
You couldn't go out of the house looking like that.
Yeah. I remember walking to my grandmother's house to the store to get ice cream. I dropped my wrapper one day. Do you know she knew before I got halfway home?
See what I mean?
She on the porch yelling, get your butt home now. And I said, oh, Lord, somebody done called her and told her already. That was the last time I did that.
No, we don't do that no more. Lesson learned.
552-29. Call in now to talk to Tracy and friends on News Talk 600 WSOM.
And we're back. Tracy and friends, six here in the air chair. Eric stepped out for a minute. He'll be back. We've got Eric number two on the phone. We've got Tracy's on the phone with us. And we've got, is that South Carolina or not Sublime Mike out there?
South Carolina.
How you doing today?
Oh, doing pretty good. Going through a little bit of calls. I didn't have a race to go through this weekend.
Yep, it was Easter. No races this weekend.
Yeah, I had to watch a rerun.
Okay. I'm headed for Richmond Saturday. I got a friend down there. Heather and I are going to go, and our wives are going to hang out, so that ought to be a good time.
Man, you got to take Tracy with you.
I'm bringing Tracy to Darlington.
All right. Yeah.
Right, Tracy?
You got some camp out in the infield.
Yeah, we're going to take...
I don't like the smell of oil, grass, and tires.
You'll love it.
I tell you what, once you go to your first one, you'll want to go every year.
Hey, Stix, you are doing a fabulous job today. I want to say that. I'm giving you that publicly. You're doing a great job. And thank you so much.
You're quite welcome, Tracy. You're quite welcome. And thank you very much for this.
I'm so impressed. I mean, I can take off more often.
There you go. You good? We got a good team here. We really do.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. We have the best.
So,
hey, listen,
anyway,
I gotta go, guys. All right.
Be safe. But anyways, let's get back to this thing. You know, we've strayed so far away from what the Constitution originally said, and we've allowed it to be altered, not in the right way. You know, there was a time when we amended the Constitution in this country, and now we just ignore it. Alabama?
I'm at my desk.
No,
I'm at my desk.
All right.
That must be taking a call.
South Carolina, what's your take on that?
Well, I heard an interesting comment made by a gentleman. He said that the servant has now become the master. And is only set on, you know, feeding its desire and feeding its greed. And that's what's happened. The United States government was never set up so that it could do the things that it's doing. You know, it's set up, you know, of, for, and by the people. But no, now it's of, for, and by the government.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever the government wants, that's what we have to deal with. We're at their mercy.
Yeah, and if you don't like it, then, like Harry Reid said, you're a domestic terrorist.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? You know, the arrogance.
I'm finding out that because I'm a former veteran, you know, I'm going to be a terrorist now. I mean.
Yeah, I heard that.
A white supremacist.
Yeah, where does this stop? You know, I want to stop mine.
You're a white supremacist.
Am I now a domestic terrorist?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be a white supremacist. I mean, seriously, that's what it said. It says that United States veterans are more likely to become white supremacists. And I'm like, okay. New York Times editorial.
Oh, jeez.
I'm right behind you. I'm Republican. I've got a survivalist streak. I've been in the NRA for almost 25 years, and I'm an Orthodox Presbyterian who believes the Bible to be inerrant. So yeah, I'm in the same category. Trust me.
Oh man, you're in trouble, dude.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat.
They're going to be coming looking for you. You're a Presbyterian.
Oh, big time.
Yeah, you're definitely in trouble.
We got to watch those Presbyterian terrorists.
And I think 13 of us signed the Declaration of Independence.
626, your mic's on.
Yeah, this is Covina, man. I had to call back tomorrow on my call.
Okay.
You know, what you guys are saying, you know, you're talking about not being a democracy, being a republic. I think you're on a scale of if you say a red state, blue state divide on the issue of. On one side of the scale, you have republic and democracy. On the other side of the scale, you have oligarchy and aristocracy. And I think that that's where the elections are being decided. If you look into it closely, because what the people who are quote on the side of liberty in the Constitution. Are proclaiming that's what they are. I'm just taking their word for it. That they're saying they're on this side. They want to go down the path to where everything is privatized. And when I say everything, let me just be specific. I don't like being general. I like being specific. They want to privatize Social Security, Medicare, and things like that. Even the post office, you know, people have ranted about stuff like that. Schools.
Well.
And then on the other side, you have the people who want to have those things in the realm of on that scale of republic and democracy.
But Covina, man, can the federal government change gravity? My point is Social Security is going bankrupt. Medicare is going bankrupt. Medicaid's going bankrupt. The federal government is going bankrupt because no matter what law they pass and what the people want, economics is like gravity. There are certain laws that you cannot change no matter how bad you want to. The Social Security, for example, it's a Ponzi scheme. It cannot work. There's no way it can work.
Yeah, whether
it's
or not
going
you...
to, it's going to bankrupt the government. It's going to bankrupt the people.
Right. So, but what I'm saying, I was making that point that you just made the argument for your side. That's what I'm saying. Your side, I would say the red state America side, if that's what we're going to divide it. I'm just saying that is the argument that they're having. Am I correct?
Well, no, it's physics.
I'm just asking about opinions, man. I'm not talking about this. Okay. Not delta to, you know.
Okay, but that I mean that's our argument. That's our argument on a lot of this stuff is it's economic physics. And if we keep going down the road we're going on, it will bankrupt the country. So it doesn't matter what you want. If it fails, in Weimar Germany, when they started printing the money, and a loaf of bread cost a day's wages because the money was worthless. They had three factories printing money, printing paper notes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. People were burning blocks of cash in their fireplaces. The money was so worthless. And that's precisely what we are doing through our Federal Reserve System now, is we are going to collapse our currency. So it doesn't matter what the people want. In fact, Ron Paul has even said they're not going to do away with Social Security. They're going to inflate the money until your Social Security check barely covers your electric bill.
Right. So I just want to make it clear that I'm accurately stating what it is one side is looking for and the other side is looking,
so,
I'm looking for the fact. Go ahead.
So let me ask you this. Should the federal government go in and bail out Detroit?
I would weigh the options, I would weigh the alternatives, and I would make the decision based upon those facts. I don't have a philosophical opinion one way or the other. It's not something that I'm, you know, staking my claim on one way or the other. I'll just look at the actual issue, and I'll make a decision.
Here's an analogy for you. I've got a question. This is Eric. I've got a question for you. Depending on how familiar you are with the, look at Westward Expansion. You're a pioneer in the Old West. You've got a mule team. You depend on that mule team to bring your goods hither and thither to market, okay? Out of nowhere, you cover some rough terrain, and one of your mules breaks his leg on a rock or severely injures his leg. Should you keep him on your mule train, which will slow down the mule train and hinder your progress, or put the mule down, what would you do? If putting the mule down was vital to your continuity, your professional continuity in your commerce, and the livelihood of the rest of the mule train, what would you do?
What does this have to do with it? Is there a point to this?
Yes, there's a definite point to this.
Okay.
It's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. The mule's got to go.
Right, make
Thank
the point,
you.
Man. You don't have to ask me. Just make the point. I can follow you with your point, man. Just go ahead and make it.
440, your mic's up.
Yeah, I think there's more going on here than everybody really realizes. What's happening is not rational, and I think a lot of it has to do with Satan and the price that we're paying for what's going on, and that is the millions of unborn children being slaughtered. That's the price we're paying for living the good life, especially our government. So that's going to come to an end. That's my philosophy on it.
Yeah, you have a very good point. I mean,
we're paying for it. We're paying for it right now, and we'll pay for it later.
Well, unfortunately, the most educated amongst us are the ones who are having the fewest children. You know, that's just an unfortunate case of demographics.
What would be the tax revenues to the government if there were, if we had to kill these 40, 50 million kid babies? What, how many kids would they have had? How much more money would the government be bringing in if it wasn't for abortion?
I agree.
Well, you explain that. You can explain that to God. You can hash that out with him.
Well,
that's murder.
Can I ask a question?
Murder, plain and
no,
simple.
No, he's on your side, 440.
Oh, okay. I couldn't hear him because he was echoing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
My
Alabama was saying
that
how much more tax revenue would the government be receiving if we had not of aborted all of those children?
Oh, okay.
We
may have aborted the man to cure cancer or a woman.
That's a story, you know.
Exactly.
Somebody goes
to
God and says, why didn't
you?
That's all. Cure for cancer's already been done. We ain't going to get into that.
I'm inclined to agree with you on that one.
There's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of things that are going on all over the place. I mean, you know, Eric and I were talking before the break. We're not even supposed to have a standing army in the United States. The Constitution provides for a Navy because a Navy is required to maintain commerce. You have to have a strong Navy to maintain commerce. But a standing army was never designed for the United States of America. It was supposed to be state militias.
To take it further back than that,
the
idea... Well, Eisenhower is one
military-industrial complex.
He warned us of that. And more to the point, more forensically, you know, the idea of a standing army is anathema to our Anglo-Saxon culture. You know, and, okay, my last name is Wells. Okay, I'm playing the blood card here. But there's a lot more to it than that. When England attempted to invade my English ancestors in 1588, we had no standing army then. What we relied on are local... Here's a buzzword, local militias in towns like Sandwich or towns like Sussex, where my great-grandfather was born.
Right, right. And, you know, they were only supposed to ramp up an army in time of actual conflict. And the idea of the Second Amendment and the militias, according to, I believe, Benjamin Rush.
He was one of them.
Everybody... He considered every able-bodied male between the ages of, 14 and 60 as a member of the militia. Oh, it's springtime.
Yeah, I got to be going in a minute. Yeah, y'all getting off into some other realm of conversation and not dealing with you know, actual stuff that's going on. You know, it's y'all on that libertarian constitutional, and let's look back to the Weimar Republic and let's look to what's going on with Scottish and all that stuff back in the 17th century. It's like I'm not part of that conversation. During that kind of time, I was somebody's slaves in out in the field. Y'all talking about some nonsense. we black folks wasn't included into the conversation until after the 16th Amendment. Well, I gotta go to work, man. Y'all have a good one.
Hello. 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 Hello.
Hey, how are you? Hello.
Hey.
Yes, who is this?
This is South Carolina.
Hey, how you doing?
Who?
Hello.
Hello.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Hey, 440, how are you?
I'm fine. Who is this?
This is Tracy.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Why are you sorry?
He never hung up.
I didn't dial. I didn't hang up.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
No, you didn't hang up. Six is on break, I'm quite sure.
All right. No, I was just telling them that everybody was trying to rationalize the government spending. I'm just telling them, I said, Satan has a lot to do with what's going on here. It's all been bought on the price of all the unborn children being murdered. So that's my take on it.
I think you're right. But actually, it's bigger than that. Because we're doing more than just unborn children and murder. I mean, we are erasing God from the marketplace completely.
Yep. I agree.
And when you take God out of the marketplace,
stimulate your mind on the issues of the day. Call the show at 347-945-5229 or toll-free at 1-800-530-WSOM. That's 347-945-5229 or 1-800-530-WSOM. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
And we're back again. Top of the third hour. Hello? Somebody call my name.
Hello?
Hello, Miss Tracy. You're back again.
Tracy.
Hello.
I'm back again. Did you miss me?
Yes, we missed you. We always missed you.
You tell stories. You guys are having a blast without me and Jeff. I can tell.
Oh, I'm just thankful Eric come in. That really helped out. That helped out a lot. We've got another new caller here, 978. Go ahead, South.
Hey, Tracy, I've got another name for Eric. I mean, I'm just going to start calling you the professor, man. Because every time you open your mouth, man, I find out some other interesting tidbit.
Hey, we just found his nickname. That's it. From now on, you're the professor from now on.
Well, all right. I'm honored.
You don't hang around here very long before you end up with a nickname. So,
wow.
The professor's in the house.
Oh, well, I'm glad to be here. Glad to be with you. And Tracy, how are you, pretty lady? How are you coming along?
I am doing good. I'm doing good. I have now emerged from the Cleveland Clinic, and I'm out, and I'm free, and I'm doing well.
How's 271 treating you?
Right now, it's doing pretty good.
Okay.
GPS is great.
I was referring to the traffic, but okay, I'm glad your GPS is working well for you.
Oh, yeah, it's doing good.
I'm still a little up in the air about my GPS because I'm on that pay-as-you-go method, and there are certain places that the satellites won't cover it. Like Hagerstown, Maryland is one of them, so, for example.
Well,
why would you pay-as-you-go? Why don't you just do free Google like everybody else? Google knows everything else about you. You might as well let them know where you are.
Yeah, it's not the same.
Well, we upgraded our GPS. We got one for RVs, because it won't take you any place that your RV won't go. Because a standard GPS will take you places your RV will not go.
That's because you're traveling with a house behind you. What do you want?
Well, that's true. We got a 42-foot long travel trailer. My wife calls it the Taj Mahal. The Taj Mahal.
That's a house.
That's camping.
It's got a shower and everything.
Oh, yeah. It's got an 18-foot garage in the back. It's a toy hauler.
Can you take long showers and whatnot in those?
As long as you've got hookups, yeah.
Oh,
okay. It carries 100 gallon of fresh water. And it's got 100 gallon fresh and 100 gallon black and 100 gallon gray.
Tracy, you've never seen the toy hauler?
Yeah, Tracy's seen the toy hauler. She's seen.
Oh,
she's been inside it. Because
okay.
She said, yeah, she's. I was trying to talk to her about going to race, and she said she wouldn't go to race because she don't do camping. And Paula showed her the toy hauler, and that she said she'd go to race in the toy hauler. So, anyways. But, anyways.
But, Eric.
What's that?
I'm just curious. I was just curious about Eric. How did you form your philosophy on life? I mean, the way you see things. What happened to you that caused you to, you know, think the way that you do?
Well, I chalk it up initially to providence and the mortal vessels that God and the integrality of his righteousness put before me back when I thought Sole Deo Gloria was some sort of a drop-top economy car built in Stockholm. I'm from the World War I generation. I was raised by it, rather. My grandfather was in our first national effort against the Kaiser, and my grandmother was 6 years his junior. And through them, I'm able to trace signers of the Declaration of Independence and presidents in my collateral ancestry. So the gravity, governmental gravities and historical gravities were a big thing in discussions in our home. I mean, I grew up, by the time I was six, I'd seen more political firefights than Michael Jordan has had three-pointers, and it left an indelible signature on my mindset. And my grandparents are in heaven now, and I love them for it, because they thought enough of me, as young as I was, to reinforce these gravities in a way, you know, in a way that they would a 30-year-old, knowing that even if I didn't understand initially, that subsequently I would catch it. And it's, again, they wouldn't take credit for it. I mean, they would attribute it to providence as I do. I hope I didn't get too syrupy or lengthy on that answer, but that's pretty much the gist of it.
Our friend South Carolina, what television show were you on for being too white, acting too white?
Dr. Phil show. Yeah, I sure was. That was kind of interesting. So, yeah, and still to this day, the young guy, the young man that I went on the show with, still says that I act too white.
I take it there's you trace a sizable portion of your ancestry to Europe, don't you?
Actually, man, I can go back to 1820, and that's as far as I can go with my grandmother and my grandfather, or great-great-great-grandparents, anyway. But now on my grandmother's side, you know, it's pretty obvious. There is some European ancestry in there. There's just too many years of being... fairer skin. It's just that the color just started changing during my generation.
The brown paper bag phenomenon. I'm heterogeneous in my own right, and my detractors use that as a weapon against me. To which I respond, I take it.
Yes, ma'am.
Was that a five-syllable word, heterogeneous?
Yeah.
The professor. Sorry about that.
The professor and Marianne. Oh.
Now,
but you
now
know
you,
the next Go ahead.
Now you've got to start giving the definition. That was one of the things that my pastor told me that hey, I understand what you're saying, but I'm the only one that understands what you're saying. You're gonna have to dumb it down a little bit for the rest of us regular folks.
Well, that depends on how you define the term regular. I was reinforced with the idea that people in my thinking were the norm growing up. I have a real problem with people like, you know, so-called educator gurus in the education industry like the late John Dewey. He did a lot of damage to this country, a lot of damage.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the dumbing down of America, and people want to singularly point to our nation's diversity as being culpable in that. No, I would be more inclined to think that it's just part of the natural phenomena of, like, these divergent cultural backgrounds flag a lot of innate antagonism, one that the cohesiveness of a society cannot endure for a protracted period of time.
Well, the thing is, we're a melting pot. And we should be a melting pot and not a salad bowl.
Yeah, in other words, assimilation is fundamentally better than integration.
Right,
yeah.
Right, because what they're doing now, and unfortunately they're doing it for political purposes, they're balkanizing the United States. They're trying to get everybody pigeonholed in their own little groups and their own little cultures so they can divide and conquer us. Because we found on this radio program there are an awful lot of things that we agree on. And there are probably more things that we agree on than we disagree on. And for example, I don't understand how any black person in the United States could be anti-gun. That just amazes me. That's one that as a group, African Americans seem to be more anti-gun than any other group. And I don't understand the logic behind that, looking at the history of the way they were treated.
Well, being partly black myself.
I'm going to say it.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, South.
Most folks that I know down here, black folks I know, they have a gun. And that's just the that talk is coming from the talking heads.
Okay. The elitists.
The elitists, yes.
Yeah, I think that's more of an up here north, because my people down in Alabama, Mississippi, oh, believe me, they got guns.
Okay.
See, it's these ultra-educated Afro-American elite that are trying to pass as spokespersons for people at the grassroots level. And I see so many so-called political leaders of African descent who I would not hesitate to describe as hermaphroditical and unchurched.
Okay.
They think that
I know what hermaphroditical is, but you're gonna have to let everybody know what that word means.
They just come across
like,
yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
A he-she. Hermaphrodite is a he-she.
Then you meet their wives who walk around here and they throw the weight around as if they could get in any gymnasium and put Ken Patera to shame. I mean, the women act like men, and the men act like women. I have a half-brother in Columbia, Maryland, whose wife charts the course for, you know, how he goes to the bathroom almost. And there was a huge breach that fell down between the two of us because he wanted to reach out to a certain family member. I advised him strenuously against it. His wife advised him to do it. He reached out. He got stopped like George Zimmerman in a rib shack. And all of a sudden, I'm the bad guy. So consequently, we haven't talked since 1996. I'm like, see ya.
Yeah. I've been looking through these quotes on militia, and we were talking about standing army. And there's one here written by Eldridge Gerry. And it's, "What, sir, is the use of a militia? It is to prevent the establishment of a standing army, the bane of liberty. Whenever governments mean to invade the rights and liberties of the people, they always attempt to destroy the militia in order to raise an army upon their ruins."
Yeah.
So.
He was my cousin's friend, Benjamin Harrison V, who also signed the Declaration. He and Jerry were very good friends. Yeah.
So, you know, it's we have to understand where we have come from, and because I think we're really going to end up someplace we don't want to be as a nation. You still there, Tracy?
Yeah.
Tracy?
I think we lost her.
Uh-oh.
Yes, Tracy's still here.
Tracy's still here.
All right. Yes,
Tracy,
so you're
being quiet. You guys think I talk a lot. I don't.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, you're involved very heavily in the political side of this. Do you think we're headed someplace we don't want to go?
Absolutely.
So what do we do about it? So what are we going to do about it?
We stand up and take notice and say no more. But you got to stand up. And if we don't stand up, we'll go where they take us.
You don't think it's gone so far we can't take it back?
No, we can take it back. I think we're too lazy to take it back, but we can take it back. Nobody wants to work. Everybody wants everything handed to them, but nobody wants to work.
Hmm.
And until we understand that, I keep on saying we are a society that everyone must participate for us to actually make it happen.
Good
point.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to vote. You got to read. You got to learn. You got to ask questions, and you got to be willing to take a bullet.
Plus, people, that's the problem. See, people equate freedom to their paycheck. They don't realize that when you fight for your freedom, that's your freedom, you know?
We don't do that. You're
not going to get paid.
We don't. Go ahead, Eric.
Go ahead, Eric. Finish
but
your
you
thought.
But you will be free, you know? And nobody wants to stand up. Take their own time out of their life to stand up for what they believe in and take this country back.
Well, a lot of people equate freedom to stuff. And they... We're getting ready to go to break here in about 9 seconds, so I'll finish this up quick. But they equate rights that they don't have, and we'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Do you...
Hey, South Carolina, I called you last night. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I saw that. I haven't seen it until very, very, very late. I was 2 seats in the wind, knocked out.
I called to tell you that I needed you because I think I'm going to be home alone.
Oh, okay, yeah, I kind of figured that. Yep.
But he's doing a good job.
Yep, here I am. So that means that you kind of owe us something. You got to come to South Cat for the next race now.
Well, you don't talk about racing. I am not sitting out in the sun.
The race is at night.
Oh,
it's at night under the lights.
Okay.
But then you can actually, you can go inside and take a nap and come back and see the end of the race.
Okay, I can do that. Do they eat well?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, in the infield, nobody goes hungry in the infield.
Okay.
People share.
Oh, good, I'm coming.
Yep. So they eat and whatever's cooking on the next couple of rows down. And, hey, man, what you got? But we have a lot of fun.
Hey, that's what it's all about. Ask me.
So are you completely done with Cleveland Clinic now, or?
No, I've got to go back in 4 months.
Okay.
Because I had cancer, I have to go back for a checkup for the next 4 months or the next 5 years.
Okay. Alrighty.
And I told the doctor I don't have time for this, but he's not listening.
Yeah. They have their own agenda.
Yeah. You have to hear Doc Mason talk about it.
Yeah, is he going to be back on this week, or?
No, he'll be back on in 2 weeks. It's second Thursday of the month.
Okay.
In 2 weeks. So I think 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay. We need a position like him around here. Talk to some of these folks. They won't listen to me.
Well, hopefully, pretty soon we'll be on a talking circuit, and you can bring us in.
Cool.
Cause that's the goal. Yeah.
The McLeod Hospital is one of the. Well, they're trying to become a teaching hospital right now.
Okay.
Which everything pretty much is set up. It's just a matter of facility for the school, and they're in the process of dealing with the city of Florence, South Carolina, to find out if they're going to allow them to have a particular building that's been sitting vacant for a number of years. Is that the radio?
I know we got to do
29, toll free at 1-800-530-WSOM, online at TracyAndFriends.com or 600WSOM.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Tracy and Friends. You got Sticks here in the air chair with the professor in-house. Tracy's online. South Carolina's online. And it looks like Not So Blind Mike has joined us. Are you there, Mike?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Oh, there you go. Good morning.
Good morning.
Did you have a good Easter?
Yes, we did. It was wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Had
good time with the family. I understand we were warmer up here yesterday than you guys were down there.
That could be possible.
But anyways, when I went to break, when I went to break, I started a thought. And we have created a society that doesn't understand that you cannot have a right that requires an action of another human being. We keep hearing that health care is a right. But to make health care a right suddenly turns the health care worker into your servant.
Correct.
Exactly.
Because you're requiring that person give you their services without payment.
Right.
Or you're going to have the government remove someone's wealth in order to make the payment to that person.
Yep.
And we've created a society where we allow government to do things to us that if it were done on a personal level, someone would be in prison. The income tax is nothing more than legalized theft, in my opinion. Because in order to live in our society, one must earn money. So by default, the income tax is a tax on your very breath.
Yeah.
Mike?
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah, it's a life tax, basically. That. You're being taxed for simply for being alive.
I like that. I like that simple definition of a right too. If it involves someone else contributing to it or giving you something, then it really isn't a right, because then you take it to the extreme, swing the pendulum out all the way. Could 7 billion people that currently share this planet with us all have that same right? And the answer is no. Not if you're expecting 6 or 7 other people to subsidize every one person who gets the right. Then it truly isn't a right.
Yeah, we've blurred that line between right and privilege. I mean, we are blessed, and that's another fallacy that we keep here thrown around by politicians. This is the richest nation on earth. This is not the richest nation on earth. This is the nation with the largest number of wealthy individuals, because the United States, as a government, actually owns, well, they own a lot of land. But really, they don't own any wealth. And the only way they could generate money without our taxes is to sell off that land that they have.
Yeah. It's like the difference in business, the people who understand the difference between cash flow and net profit. big difference.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
We have cash flow in this country that allows the government to put together all these, instead of rights, they're really social co-ops is what they are,
mm-hmm.
that we agree upon at times, or we disagree upon, that we don't need to do that, but we all agree, well, gee, it would be nice, I'll throw $3 in the hat, and let's educate that kid for $20. You know, that, okay, we all agree that's a good social co-op, education, you know, so we agree upon it, but it's not a right. It's a social co-op.
Right.
And how effective is a social co-op when you consider that prior to the standardization, quote-unquote, of the educational industry, America, in the proportional sense, was far more literate
mm-hmm.
than it is today. I mean, I look at the mathematical formulas taught by the brilliant mathematics professor from Virginia, Confederate General Daniel Harvey Hill, and I can't think of a single person on the campus of YSU or any other college for that matter that I know that could begin to equate with that amount of acumen. And, this
uh-huh.
is pre-John Dewey, pre-everything. We're talking 1840s, you know, 1850s.
Uh-huh.
He was a Confederate
uh-huh.
general. So
okay, now, hold on. Now, wait a minute. You just created an oxymoron because no Confederate can do math. That's impossible.
Well, Lee defeated McClellan on the peninsula, John Pope at Second Manassas, McClellan again at the stalemate at Antietam. He defeated Ambrose Burnside at Fredericksburg and Joseph Hooker at Pancasville. So to put the argument out there that Confederacy was logistically or mathematically unsound is kind of a misnomer, to say the least.
Yeah. You know what's also cool? Go back even further to the Revolutionary times. And read some of the letters home from the soldiers fighting in the Continental Army. These were ragtag farmer people who didn't have much formal education. And you read letters like, "It is with great consternation, my beloved, that we face the vexing situation of the looming conflict." Today, if you put that in front of half the college kids, they couldn't tell you what eight of those words meant.
Absolutely
not. And these were people who were illiterate farmers, you know, but they could write eloquently because they had command of the vocabulary. Of the
exactly.
Actually, when de Tocqueville came over here and wrote Democracy in America, he was amazed. In Democracy in America, there's a quote, in even the most far-reaching backwoods cabin, you will find literature and newspapers and always a Bible.
Yeah.
I mean, we were illiterate people because we read our Bibles. That's the one main thing about the United States is active Christianity requires you read your scriptures.
And that was the emphasis, if I may add to that, of for the entire public educational system in this country. It was predicated upon the enactment in Massachusetts, the Deluder Satan Act in 1647. The concept was educate people, make them literate to the point they could read their Bible, and that'll be just one more weapon in their arsenal to guard against the wiles of the adversary, the devil, Satan.
See, I'm looking at
most,
eighth grade.
Most hospitals, mm-hmm. you want to look at healthcare, most hospitals were Christian-based back in the day.
The first hospital in the United States was a public hospital funded with donations set up by Benjamin Franklin. The first hospital it was in the colonies then, but I'm looking at this eighth grade graduation test from Salina, Kansas, 1895.
Uh-huh.
And I'll just pull a few of the questions out here. Grammar. Give 9 rules for the use of capital letters. One more grammar. What are the principal parts of a verb? Give the principal parts of do, lie, lay, and run. Arithmetic. Name and define the fundamental rules of arithmetic. Now here's one. Here's one. This is the dumbing down of America, because District Number 33 has a valuation of $35,000. What is the necessary levy to carry on a school 7 months at $50 per month and have $104 for incidentals? This is an eighth grade graduation test.
Wow.
They don't teach you can be a senior in college, and the questions aren't that hard.
Find the interest of $512.60 for 8 months at 18 days at 7%. without a calculator.
Hold on, Sticks. Let me get my smartphone out.
You know.
But then in front of Obama, he'd go, well, I've got to run and ask Michelle about that, especially if I'm hermaphroditical and unchurched.
I don't even know what orthography is, but it's on this test. But, you know, U.S. history. Give the epochs into which U.S. history is divided.
Wow.
Describe the most prominent battles of the rebellion. I'm assuming that's the revolution.
The rebellion? No, that might be the war between the states.
Yeah, they refer to that as the rebellion, yeah.
Okay.
Kansas would refer to it as the rebellion, yeah.
Okay.
Because they were a neutral state, weren't they, as I recall? They were neither north nor south. They were trying to stay
right
out of the cold,
they were
slave
still,
issue.
Yeah, right.
Bleeding Kansas, that's William Clark Quantrill's country, and Bloody Bill Anderson and their protege, Jesse James.
Oh, mm-hmm. We couldn't possibly have our children learn this. Geography, what is climate, upon what does climate depend?
Democrat or Republican is the answer to that today.
yeah. But
I got a question for you guys.
All right.
A question for you. No one's been through Marine Corps boot camp but me, right? And
I think you're the only one on phone to help you.
I think you've got a pretty good idea of what Marine Corps boot camp is like.
However, I went through Uncle Sam's
Marine Corps boot camp. Once you get finished with Marine Corps boot camp, you go through your specialized training, and some of that training requires you to be, you know, if you're going to be a grunt, you have to go through infantry training school. Okay? Now, there was this article that I'm reading on the Internet where there's somebody did an article stating that Miss Martha Raddatz. And we all know, if you don't know who Martha Raddatz is, she's an NPR, you know, talking head. She says that women Marines were set up to fail because of the rigorous and very hard training that they put them through the past infantry training school. What?
Wait a minute.
If you call being able to survive in real combat a failure.
You're talking
about
that's called,
that's called being able to come home in one piece.
What's that, South?
You're talking about 15 weeks of infantry training school. There's a bunch of guys that can't do that. Some Marines have issues with that. And you expect training that they're supposed to make the training easier so that a female Marine can get through? I don't think so.
I don't want to go into combat with somebody that can't carry me if I get shot.
I mean, when you've got an average 150-pound individual, plus their 70-pound pack, and you've got to carry that Marine, and then you've got to carry their packs if necessary, and other gear. Look, either you can do it or not. Come on, let's be realistic about this.
Do you really think the enemy is going to make it easier for you as well? That's the assumption here. I mean, what are these people thinking?
I mean, I do know women. I do know women
can
that can
this?
Do that. Go ahead.
Sure.
Yeah, I can answer this. You'll just do what Hillary tells you to do. Leave them behind. It's over.
Oh,
man.
Wow.
Hey,
but,
that's the truth. The truth hurts. That's what it is. You leave them behind. How about that?
Mm. What difference does it make?
That would be very, very hard for a Marine.
You don't.
Yeah, well, they did it.
Like I said, at this point, what difference does it make?
The SEALs and the Delta team, they left them behind. They never challenged us. End of the game.
Hmm.
We're about this for nothing. We leave people behind now.
We usually don't do that. Yep. But, you know, job's just
Well, we're destroying our warrior class.
Yeah.
We're feminizing our men. Little boys aren't allowed to play cops and robbers or army anymore. If a child even points its gun, I got a loaded finger on a professor here right now.
Mm-hmm.
you know, he's getting expelled. What's going to become of us when we completely destroy our warrior class?
Hey, listen, the poor kid got suspended for 3 days for asking Miss America to the prom. I'm surprised they didn't get him on sexual harassment.
Right. Yeah, I saw that story.
It's like they're breaking down the barriers that would promote the continuity of the male-female interchange.
Well,
can have the pretty girls do a prom. I mean, what's wrong?
In my opinion, I think we have elected our first metrosexual president.
More like the second. I question James Buchanan. I really question James Buchanan.
Yeah.
And I really have issues with his successor also.
Yeah.
The bachelor president?
What's that, Sal?
The bachelor president?
Yeah, it was alleged that he had a hint of mint as the expression goes.
A little light in the loafers there.
But, you know, I mean, our sitting president does not do traditionally male activities. He doesn't hunt.
Nope.
I mean, the picture with the shotgun, you could tell somebody just handed him that thing. No, he didn't have no idea what he was doing.
No.
You know, somebody handed him that thing, said we're going to take a picture, and the bullets come out. Oh, it's break time.
That was interesting. Hey, South Carolina, I volunteered for today.
You volunteered for
what? Yeah. Bill is still in Texas because of his ex-wife's passing, and I told him that if he needed anything done back here at home, that between you and I, we could get it covered, so just call us if he needed a favor.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I volunteered you. You can handle it.
Oh, okay.
You had big shoulders. You can handle it.
I don't know if he wants to leave me and you alone to run his show.
No. It wasn't to run his show. It was just in case something happened with the house or his wife needed some help. Or, you never know. Or he needed
no
something
problem.
Taken care of until he got back. No. I don't want to run anybody else's show because then I'd feel obligated to support them the rest of their life when I destroyed it.
Yeah.
And I got enough work to supply an income for the people I'm in charge of now. So.
Hey, Mike, if Jim and Six haven't destroyed my show yet, it's okay, you know.
It's okay?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but Tracy, you don't know Bill. Bill is how can you say it? He's a Texas gentleman.
Yeah, he is.
And his show is definitely doesn't have the same flavor as this one, for sure. I mean, it's a great show, but he's I don't know, how would you say, like?
Unique.
Unique, yeah.
Unique. Let me put it this way. He wears a T-shirt with a rattlesnake on it. It's his favorite T-shirt, Diamondback. And he wears a hat that has given him the honor as the grumpy old man of South Carolina.
Yeah. He's about two shakes from being a curmudgeon.
Yeah. He used to be an investigative reporter. He used to do all kinds of stuff. And if you're a political hack, you may be a guest on his show, but he'll come right out and ask you, why are you a political hack? He's polite about it, but you know where you stand with him.
Well, Tracy, I did find a gentleman yesterday. I met him in a parking lot, young guy. I want to say he's about 20, 21 years old. And normally I don't do that, but he sold me a CD in the parking lot. Said he was trying to get exposure and everything. I bought the CD from him, and I put it in. And this is rap, but this is the cleanest rap I have ever heard. The kid's talking about being a daddy. He's talking about being, you know, the freedom of speech. You know, he says, he makes one statement. How can you have freedom of you finally get freedom of speech when they've indoctrinated you on what to say?
Ooh, ooh,
and that was deep for, I mean,
yeah,
you know, a young kid. So
yeah,
I'm waiting for him to call back so I can, you know, give him your number so you might be able to take him or bring him on the show.
Do that. Dude, I'd love to have him on.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I listen to all 21 tracks.
530-WSOM or 347-945-5229. Call in now to talk to Tracy and friends on Newstalk 600-WSOM.
And we're back from break, and this is our final segment. It's 11:45 here on the East. In Eastern time zone. And this is Sticks here in the studio, and I got the professor here online. I have Tracy. I've got Not So Blind Mike. I've got South Carolina. And I've got Alabama. No, I don't have Alabama anymore. He's left me. So anyways, but we were talking before we went to break, we were talking about the Constitution and how we've walked away from understanding what a right is and not what a privilege is. And until we understand that, and until we understand that we're allowing our government to steal from us because we're not demanding accountability from our politicians, and until we do these things, we can't turn it around.
Yeah, regarding health care as a right, or the access to health benefits, if you will, as a right, I'm afraid would elevate the promulgators or the expositors of health care to politically idolatrous levels. I mean, you can't use the term right and privilege interchangeably and then turn around and complain about big government. It doesn't quite work that way. You know, we have to sometimes draw the line between method and objective. And another thing I've noticed in our repartee today, I've heard the terms democracy and republic used almost interchangeably.
Right.
Now, I don't care how interchangeable or indistinct the house cat is from the mountain lion, and they are closely related. Would you be inclined to trust the latter in a fenced-in backyard with a 7-year-old? I think not.
Well, you know, we have to remember that George Washington said, government is like fire. A useful service, but a fearsome master, or something, that to paraphrase. And we just... Our government has reached into so many parts of our lives now, and it's so far removed from what it started as.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what's going on in – I just want to say, you look at what's going on in New York with the horse-drawn-carriage fiasco, where they're trying to get rid of – well, I mean, the argument is that horses are being overworked, knowing that they've been pulling wagons forever. But next, they're going to say that it's inhumane to simply ride a horse.
Well – just look, in the United, right now, it's illegal to shoot a feral cat, but it's not illegal to murder an unborn child. I mean, we have gone so far off the rails with our concepts of right and wrong that it's going to take a major calamity to bring them back to where they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Radical democracy and liberalism threatens a logical disconnect.
It's all being done in the name of progress, which is the insane part of it.
Well, the thing is, why do you need to progress? You know, when why do you need to change something that was perfect? And not only that, if you really wanted to change something that was perfect, being the Constitution of the United States, why don't we do it the right way? Instead of doing it through executive order activist judges.
It sticks.
Yes.
Because we've been dumbed down so long that we don't know the difference between democracy and republic, aggressive and bondage. And we definitely don't know the difference between entitlement and freedom or rights. And that's what's wrong with America. We don't understand it. And we've been dumbed down so long that we will never understand it because we've never taught them the truth. And when you don't know the truth, you will never be free. And so as I heard someone say a little bit earlier, what they're doing is they're regurgitating what someone else, I think that was you, South Carolina, a young man you said was talking about, he had a rap song, and freedom of speech as long as you regurgitate what you've already been indoctrinated to hear.
Exactly, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you...
That's the problem.
They're giving you, they're telling you about freedom of speech, but they only want you to say what they told you to say, and that's the only thing that's free. So they're lying to you and tell you that you got free speech, but the second you say something that's not politically correct, you'll see exactly how much your free speech is, how much free speech you have. You know, and you can only have free speech in a 20-by-20 zone, 3 miles away from, you know, interfering or asking any questions of the people that are trying to oppress you.
And therein lies the problem.
But we talk about this on almost a daily basis here. And Tracy, do you think anybody's listening?
Yeah. People are listening, they just don't know what to do about it. But people are listening, and people care.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to care when you don't know how to act. And what we're going to have to start doing is finding a way for people to come together and understand that it's okay to agree to disagree, but it's not okay to do nothing at all.
Well, we need to. We need to work.
It's healthy.
Right, and we need to work together on the things we do agree on. You know, and the healthcare thing, we've discussed this ad nauseum, but we didn't need a 2,200-page bill to make sure that the least among us had access to decent healthcare.
But that was the politics of it, and that's where we lose.
Right. Because everybody, and it drives me crazy when I hear people talk about special interests, because everybody's a special interest. You know, you'll hear the unions talking about special interest money influence politics, and they're a special interest too, just like everybody else that wants their own piece of flesh from the government.
You're a fault.
And so we have to understand that we have to use our votes to influence our politicians, because the other side, the people who want are working against us have all the money, and we need to hold our politicians accountable. What's that?
It's bigger than our votes. It's bigger than accountability. It's called getting involved and being active.
Right.
What good is it if I choose your leader, and all your leaders are the same?
Right.
So whoever you choose the lesser of two evils, but all of them are going to do my bidding.
Right, right.
It does no good. Right. I mean, seriously.
Right.
Look at who you had to choose from the last couple of years.
Oh,
Is there any difference between them?
Not a whole lot. And this goes back, probably to the inception of the country, but the reason Woodrow Wilson was elected was because J.P. Morgan funded Teddy Roosevelt's campaign, because he knew that Wilson or Roosevelt would give him the Federal Reserve and William Howard Taft would not. So he divided the Republican vote in order to get Wilson elected, because he wanted the Federal Reserve.
But again, the voter for him. Remember, special interests only have one vote, like everyone else. Those people. The question is, how did you sway the people?
That's what I'm saying. He used his money to split the Republican vote between Teddy Roosevelt and William Howard Taft, so he could get what he wanted.
But again,
and the people had no idea that it was being done to them.
But how do they sway the people? Because remember, money doesn't vote either. So how do people get swayed? How do they become hoodwinked? They didn't have the internet. How did they become hoodwinked and devoted for something that was going to their demise?
Well, they didn't have the internet, but you had you still had an incessant barrage of media and politicians on stoops with convolutions and half truths under the banner of quote unquote democracy.
So how did that happen?
Well,
Roosevelt
was a very flamboyant figure.
Oh yeah, he was shrewd.
At
least he was masculine though, but he was shrewd.
And we have to understand as this stuff's happening, we have to look and see who's pulling the strings behind the curtain. And we need to figure out who that is, because you're right. The way it's going right now, we've got Republicrats and Democrats. Once you get above your congressman, they're all the same mindset. And we need to pay attention and understand these people and get these people elected and get involved in the parties to make the party do what we want the party to do.
You know, and they're calling for all this ideological uniformity, and I'm afraid that's trickling down, affecting the grassroots as opposed to the other way around. Like, here's a good case in point, school uniforms. You don't need those.
Oh, I'm all for school uniforms.
You are?
Yeah.
On what grounds?
Conformity, and just makes life easier. I'm for school uniforms.
Yeah, but the Youngstown public school system was a lot healthier when that wasn't.
What's that, Trace?
It was a lot healthier when people prayed in school. When you said the Pledge of Allegiance and you let the teachers, that you allowed them to have power in the classroom.
Oh, right.
There's nothing. Uniforms didn't heal you or cure you. But, you know, lack of actually having power in the classroom does.
We took the power from
the parent and put it somewhere else and put it into the government's hands. That's a problem.
Right. We don't allow our school teachers and administrators to discipline. I mean, that's a thing that's going to kill us, because we have an undisciplined society, and it's growing increasingly undisciplined. You know, what this generation accepts and tolerates, the next generation will embrace. And we're headed down this road to destruction. Because the physics don't work.
So why do we allow it?
Because
how in the world do we allow the government to take our children?
Because we've got these silver-tongued troglodytes around here. First of all, people like Dr. Spock. It began with him. Well, no, it actually began earlier with him. You know, with these guidelines. It amazes me, you know, that these vocal, especially these progressive, so-called forward-thinking feminists, I mean, women who have no record of relationships or children, telling these family women and these married women how to handle their kids and husbands. That's the crux of the problem.
Well,
I have with the each one teach one. It takes a village mentality.
Well, the thing is, they beat up on Sarah Palin. As far as I'm concerned, Sarah Palin and her lifestyle is closer to the average American woman than Hillary Clinton ever could be.
Now, granted, Sarah Palin may not be quite as feminine as Barack Obama, but at least she embodies. But at least Sarah Palin is feminine, and she's gorgeous, and she's, you know, I love her. I love Sarah Palin.
But can I ask you like another question?
Go ahead.
But now, Sarah Palin got a daughter. She's got a reality show, and I'm not impressed with that. I actually saw her on a wife swap the other day, home swap, a celebrity swap. I mean, you know, we got to quit using people as a measuring post, because they're all wicked.
Right.
Just do the right thing.
Right.
How hard is that?
Very hard. It really is.
I'm not going to put Sarah Palin on a pedestal, and I'm definitely not going to. I'm not going to demonize Barack Obama. But I'll say it this way. Everybody puts their pants on the same way. But when you take God out of your society, this is what you get. And the person you're going to listen to.
Well, this is the end of the day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Hey, South Carolina.
Got by your own show.
Hey, it happens. Right. They got to go.
Yeah.
They
got to
go.
I'm text messaging, or not text messaging, but sending this guy, the young man, information to give me a call.
Oh, cool.
So we can get in contact with him.
Good, good.
I'm
looking at this Sarah Palin and, you know, Barack Obama. They all the same. Ain't no different. People are opportunists, and they don't mind selling America down the drain, no matter who they are.
Oh, yeah.
You could. I mean, you are for sale.
Yeah, a politician, not a either politician, not public servants.
See what I'm saying?
Yep.
So if you're selling me to the highest bidder, that makes me a slave, doesn't it?
Oh yeah. We're slaves to the. To the government system. Like I said, the servant has become the master, and the servant is a tyrant. Big time tyrant. Okay.
Hey, South Carolina, have you ever had flaxseed sprinkles?
Have I what?
Flaxseed.
Flaxseed?
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we're just having a discussion about that this morning, me and my wife, you know, and actually talking about putting, using some land that the family has down in Georgia to grow flaxseed, and to sell out the flax, which is stalk, for cloth, which is pretty good.
So is it good?
Yeah.
You talking about making money? I'm talking about how does it taste?
Oh, it tastes good. I mean, of course, it's going to be one of those things that's high in fiber, so it's going to have an adverse effect on some
person. So when I put it on my cereal, am I going to throw my cereal out?
No.
Okay.
Just don't put too much. Don't put too much.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, what kind of cereal are you going to put it on? You're not going to put it on Cocoa Pops, are you?
No, you know I've been hanging out with Matt. And Matt got me eating birds. Between Matt and Danielle, they're going to have me on bird seed and tree bark.
Okay.
I guess that works.
Okay. Yeah. Tree bark is good.
That's what I hear. It's good for you even if it's not good.
Yep. Okay. I'm going to have to boogie, y'all.
Well, boogie on. I love you. Thank you so much. I appreciate
All right.
it.
All right, now. Y'all take it easy.
All right. See you tonight.
Hello. Anyone left?